Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Family, we're about to embark on the one-year mark of Summit of the Moors. Summit of the Moors is a galvanizing event where we take all Moors from around the planet and we work on one particular agenda. And we have been working this agenda. And that agenda is three primary things: food, clothing, and shelter. Now, we are working on creating financial sectors owned and controlled by Moors in order to capture and create inheritable wealth for our children. We're talking about investing, partnerships, building, the application of controlling independent agriculture systems, real estate, housing, land, manufacturing, distribution, wholesale. These are the things that will make a nation. These are the things that will secure wealth for our children and our grandchildren's children. Summit of the Moors, January 10th through the 11th. Check us out on the website, summitofthemoors.com. Peace.
Prior to the turn of the century, 95% of the people inside the United States were self-employed. Immediately after the turn of the century, we got 95% of the people working for just 5% of the population. What happened? Well, we have a lot of people that pay attention to television. You see your politicians will come on there, and they'll talk about the problems that we have, and then they're talking about they're doing everything that they can to make sure that we provide more jobs. Well, if you're providing more jobs, common sense tells me that there'll be more and more people that are working for somebody else. When are you going to tell us about the people who are self-employed, you know, like the 95% in the beginning when we were prosperous people? But that's not the case. However, what we're here doing is we're providing you an opportunity to be an employer instead of an employee, so that you can provide opportunity for other employers to be self-employed. Go to www.TahakaPowernomics.net. That's www.TahakaPowernomics.net. Once you sign up for the Platinum Matrix, you can receive absolutely free Tahaka Archives Master Library. We'll give that to you absolutely free as a result of you taking responsibility for your own self and then becoming an employer instead of an employee.
Welcome, Moors, to Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe, and this evening we're dealing with learning secrets of the rich and avoiding mistakes of the poor. We're going to deal with what is the difference between rich and poor, how important is school to becoming wealthy, for what reason should you accumulate wealth, is it safe to remain poor, what are the secrets of the rich, what is the best business in America for the poor to become involved in today. These are just a few of the questions that we're going to deal with here this evening, and I hope that you all have your paper and pencil handy so y'all can put down this information, because we're going to give you, I'm going to try to make this as simple as I possibly can to even a third grader can understand this. First of all, before we get started, let me remind you all that every Wednesday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we host our wealth building class, and the number to dial to get in there is 712-432-3100. The access code is 865-074. That's 865-074. And that's every Wednesday night, 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure you're there. And if you're in a network, if you're on my team, you have a couple of days to get the word out that people who you're trying to sponsor in your network, you're trying to get them involved in what you're trying to do so that you can put some money in their pocket. Make sure that they come there so that we can show them how that they can be successful with the opportunity they're being presented with, okay? Real, real simple program. If you're part of my network or if you're not a part of my network and you're trying to build your own network, bring your prospects over there so that they can get some information under their belt and that they can learn some things that will benefit them. Now, I want to deal with some basic things that a lot of us probably already know. And then there may be some of us who do not know. Now, I want to deal with the question, what's the difference between the rich and poor? Put it more easily. Let's just say, what's the difference between one man and another? Well, the basic difference is the way you think. The words that come out your mouth. And I want to recommend some books to you. You might want to write these books down. One of the books was written by a gentleman called Maxwell Maltz, M-A-L-T-Z, Maxwell Maltz. It's called Psycho-Cybernetics. In that book, and I read this book back in the 70s, and the book had helped me a great deal. In understanding some things. And it coincides with the actual principles that's already laid out in the ancient African records, or the books that you're calling your Bible, where it says, in the beginning was the Word. In the beginning was the Word. And what people have to understand, the workings of your own brain. When we were in school and when we tried to read, the teacher would tell us if she's got everybody reading, she'd say, read in silence. I found out later that was not good. Because what happens is the words that come out of your mouth are picked up through the microphone of the ears. And it's being recorded by the brain. Everything you hear, everything you see is being recorded by the brain. So when you use certain words, the brain automatically goes to work, no matter what it is. You say, hey, there's a wonderful day. I feel great. The brain automatically goes to work, manufacturing all the reasons why you are correct. That's what the brain does. It automatically kicks in the gear, going to bring up all the reasons why you're correct. Now, at the sentinel, at the front of the gate of that brain is a sentinel. That sentinel there will allow things in or keep things out. It's basically up to you. Your thoughts and the words and stuff that come out your mouth are very, very important in shaping your future. If you around somebody and they say, oh, man, I sure feel bad. Ooh, my arm hurting, my leg hurting. Well, the brain has to go to work manufacturing all the reasons why you are correct. I ain't got no money. I'm broke. Every time I get my paycheck, I ain't got a dime. They be working me hard. They won't let me get no overtime. My left knee hurt. My other left knee hurt. All of this, you know, the brain had to go to work manufacturing all the reasons why you were correct. But if we stop and understand this equation, what we can do is we can start formulating our own system to make sure we get the maximum potential out of the use of the brain and control what comes out of our mouth, control what our thoughts are about. Now, this is just right there where you're standing at without any paper, any pencil, any money, anything, right there with you. It starts right there with you. And the basic difference between the rich and the poor is the same. You are in an environment that is conducive to success. You're in a successful environment. You're surrounding yourself with people that are successful. Success rub off on them. Because see, what the things that the rich are talking about and the things that the rich are actually doing is something totally different from what you're hearing from the poor and what you hear the poor saying. You can go in a poor neighborhood and you're surrounded by poor people, and everybody's talking, everybody's doing all these things, and you have to keep in mind that your brain is recording everything that you hear. Your eyes are recording, uses lenses for the brain to record everything that you see. And if you stay in that environment, you discover that you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have to force yourself to think differently, and you're going to have to put forth more effort if you want to get yourself out of that situation. I remember reading a book by a gentleman. His name was Herbert W. Armstrong. And he was the minister of the Worldwide Church of God, and he said that he had to travel. And first class was much more expensive than the coach. But what he did was he would always spend the extra money, even if he had to make sandwiches and eat for lunch because he couldn't afford to buy anything else. He had spent the money to get in first class. But he stayed up there so that he could hear everything that the rich was talking about, everything that the successful people had to say. Because he knew if he was in coach, he wasn't going to hear anything that was going to be of any value. So he went on to become the one of the most prominent people in the world, in my opinion. However, you always want to put yourself in a position where that you can control your environment, control what you allow to be recorded by the brain, and therefore which is conducive to changing your circumstance. Because, see, we can say what we want to say, but everybody wants the same thing, the sunshine, the rain, and we want to live a peaceful and prosperous life. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I have been around men, and I have tested them. And, they were unfortunate. And I said, wow, brother, look at that. I said, man, that is a beautiful Cadillac. I would like to own one of those one day. Oh, man, you couldn't give me no Cadillac. I had the money to buy one, I wouldn't even buy no Cadillac, man. Okay, all right, that's the way you see it. But I didn't see it that way. And what I had to do, the environment that I was living in, I was living in an apartment complex. And there were young men downstairs, they were selling weed, they had traffic coming and all kind of stuff. I would invite guests up to my new apartment because, in my mind, I had a new apartment. It was nice and clean inside. I kept it clean. It was always peaceful. I didn't deal with the drugs and the guys and stuff downstairs with all of that. I was respected by them because of how I carried myself. But when my friend came over to the house, one lady, she said, well, you know, I love you like a brother. She said, but I don't feel comfortable being up here with my car downstairs. I just feel like something's going to happen. So I said, okay. I understand. So I have to leave this environment. I'm going to have to get in an environment where I have total control of my thinking, total control of my associates, total control of everything so that I can actually think, plan, and propel myself to a different station in life. And as a result of making those decisions, I became successful. And I'm here with you now, and I do all right with what I do. And I still control my environment, but my thinking is different. I don't think like a lot of people think. I'm not, you know, if I'm, first of all, I have adopted Mr. Robert Kiyosaki's principles. He said, if you're working and you're making money, the first person to get paid is by any bill collector is you. You decide how much you're going to pay yourself. You're the first one to get paid. If you got, you make $50, but you got a bill collector saying you owe $50, well, he just going to be $10 short. I had to catch him next time. $10 out of that $50 going to me because, I earn the money, so it's only right that I pay myself first. Now, a lot of us have this thing in our mind that, well, you know, the Lord say that we're supposed to give 10% to the church. I say, you mean that church right over there? They say, yeah, yeah. I say, with the pastor that's driving in the Cadillac, what kind of car are you driving? You're going to go to hell. I say, okay, all right, back up. we want to take and we want to formulate plans. You got to have a plan. You know, you got your thinking going on right. You got all that going. So now we want to put something down on paper because if we got a plan, then we can do some things. What I would like to recommend is the plan that I use. The first thing I have is a basic plan. It's a box. It says income. All right? So I add the income in that box. Below that box, I have expenses, and that's what I'm having to pay out. Below that, I have assets. So I look at what assets I have, and under assets, the first thing that I got listed on the assets is my name. I'm my biggest asset. So if we're dealing with assets, I have to list me as the biggest asset. Right there, okay? And after that, any other assets that I have, I'll put it there. Underneath assets, now we got liabilities, okay? A lot of us would think that, I just bought a brand-new Lexus. I just bought a brand-new, what do you call them, a Beamer. I just bought a brand-new Badman wagon, what's called a BMW. And, I have arrived. You know, every time I pull up there and I get out there, people be telling me how nice it look and my chest stuck out. But if we look at that bad man wagon and we really do the math on the bad man wagon, we'll have to list the bad man wagon up on the liabilities. We can't list that on the assets because as an asset, it's not producing anything to put up in the income sector, you see. So it can't be listed as an asset. It has to be listed as a liability because we're going to have to take money from the income section to put gas in the bad man wagon. We're going to have to take money from the income section to put tires on the bad man wagon. We're going to have to do all kind of maintenance. We're going to have to get it washed and get the rims clean, get the armor off. You know we got to get the armor off on it, and all that comes out of where? The income section, you see. So the brand-new bad man wagon that we thought was an asset, now we know it's a liability because the bad man wagon ain't putting nothing in the income section. It's sitting out there look pretty. It's waiting on you to feed it. And you got to feed it with what? Your income. Okay, so we got a problem there. The next thing that we would think is an asset is our home. Nope, that's a liability. We got to put down a liability. We got to get it painted. We got to keep the lights on. We got to keep the water on. We got to keep the gas on. We got to keep heat. We got to keep air. And all that comes from where? It comes from the income section. So we've got some misconceptions because a lot of people list their homes and their cars as their assets. And they can't figure out, well, this ain't coming out right. It's because you got stuff in the wrong place on the paper. You got to clearly define your assets. You got to clearly define your liability. And you got to make sure that on the assets, number one on the assets is you. Your name got to go right there. You got to calculate the income. Now, once you get this formula clearly understand, now you are officially ready to start setting up a goal for yourself and a plan to accomplish that goal in order to do what? Get more income so that you can invest in more assets so that these assets can generate more assets that produce more income in order to be reinvested in. See, money is never meant to be stagnate. Never. The only reason money sits still is when you are putting them together seed capital for investment. You cannot get rich spending or saving money. You have to invest. You have to keep a revolving door. You have to keep a revolving door. You have to, when you get that money, you follow the basic principles. Number one, I made $60 today. Okay, I got to take 10 out of the 60, and I got to put that over here in the asset category, because when I get enough, I'm going to invest in an appreciable asset or an asset that will generate some more income. I'm not going to constantly have income coming in. Even if I have a job in a business, I may be making $700, $800, $900, and I can't be letting my brain get on, well, I got to splurge today. No, you can't do that. No, you remember, you got a goal, and you got a plan to accomplish that goal. You got a deadline on that goal for its accomplishment. Anything to get in the way, you got to move it out of the way. You cannot let anything interfere with that plan, because you got a deadline to accomplish whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. Now, if you don't have a plan and you are not trying to accomplish your goal, then you don't leave very much room for happiness, because happiness is possible only when you're in the process of accomplishing that. That's the only time you're truly happy, when you're in the process of accomplishment. So if you want to be happy, stay in the process of accomplishment, and you discover that you'll be happy. And we got to stop going on with a whole lot of the cliches that people be telling us. Well, the Lord say the rich can't go through the eye of the needle and all of this, all of this stuff. You know, these are things that poor people have a lot of cliches that they're saying. Rich people have a lot of money that don't say nothing. They're able to do whatever it is they want to do. I would rather have $50 million and decide to be broke than be broke and try to figure out a way to get $50 million. No. We ain't going to do that. So you cannot help anybody if you don't have anything to help them with. So we have to get rid of all of these things that we've been fed all of our life. People have been telling you, you got to go to school, get a good education, so you can get a good job. I mean, No. You got to change that. I'm looking for somebody to say, you got to go to school, get a good education, so you can open up your business for yourself. No, they ain't going to tell you that. Because, see, the rich, in order for the rich to remain rich, They live by certain codes, rules, regulations, and guidelines. But what a lot of us do is we'll go to work for somebody else who's got rules, regulations, and guidelines and got their company rolling. They're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. They got you working for them because they understand the principle that they can't be successful if they help other people be successful as they go along. That's one of the basic principles of saying, and we're going to get to that. But you are there. You are under the rules, regulations, and guidelines. But when you leave there, you are like, oh, I'm free. I can do anything I want to do. I can sleep late. I'm going to go up here to the club. I'm going to stop and get me a blunt. I'm going to get a blunt. And I'm going to get that. And then I'm going to get some beer. I'm going to get me some liquor. I'm going to the club. And I'm going to hang out. And I'll see me a nice lady, you know, I'm going to take her out to dinner. We're going to splurge and do it. But then come Monday morning, you got to go back under the rules and regulations of somebody else. Because the man who does not follow his own mind, follow the thoughts of his own mind, will follow the thoughts of the man who followed his. See, you didn't put any rules and regulations and discipline and guidelines behind you. You see, you got out from under somebody else's rules and regulations and guidelines, but you didn't put any on you so that you can. And I always try to put it in a nutshell. See, they'll have mores. You wish more. So you didn't know that you out here struggling trying to figure out a way to have more. But what you got to do is to become a have more. And there are rules, regulations, and guidelines, and there are principles that govern wealth. And if you change your mind, change your thinking, you're well on your way. After you change your mind and change your thinking, now we need a plan. We start putting it down. We start working this thing like clockwork. We're gonna break it on down, and let me see what I can do this month. I gotta see, because at the end of the month, I gotta go get in here, put the paper on the table, and turn it up based on what efforts I've done for the past 30 days to see what I have accumulated to put in the income section, minus my expenses. And I had to fine-tune this thing until I get a system going where I'm generating capital to be put over in the asset section to invest. Take that asset and invest in another asset so I keep this thing going. I can't let that money sit that long. That money got to roll. It's got to go somewhere else. It got to go into something else. It's got to keep on moving, you see. So when we put the plan together, then the next thing is we got to start looking at the principles. And we won't look at the principles through the whole thing, but there's a time when the principles come in, we want to make sure that we definitely use the principles of success. First person to get paid is you. The next thing is, in order for you to be successful with whatever it is that you're trying to be successful with, you have to make other people become successful as you go along. Now, one of the greatest phenomena that has come along inside the United States of America is we have the opportunity, because, see, the United States doesn't have an out-of-quota system. You have the right to go in business for yourself. You have that right here so far. So that means that you can go in business. You can say, well, look, I'm going to start selling moon pies. I'm going to start selling these little hats I made. Well, you got a plan. You got a goal. You set a goal for yourself. So if you got the plan and you selling hats for $5 a piece, okay, so now you know that's a small amount of money, so what you want to do is understand the next principle. If it is money that you are after, you must go where it is and where it is being spent, you see. If you would ask a man, the owner of a the owner of the McDonald's franchise, what business he's in. Most of us would think that he's in the hamburger business, but he's not going to tell you that. That's what he's selling. But he's in the real estate business because he's going to take his main focus to put down a McDonald's franchise is to strategically place that franchise in the face of incoming traffic. I'll strategically place it where traffic can be driven directly to that McDonald's franchise. So he's in the what? He's in the real estate business. He just happened to be selling hamburgers. And you got a lot of people who are in a lot of powerful professions. You ask them, what business are they in? They'll tell you, well, I'm a doctor. No, that's your profession. But what business are you in? Well, I'm a psychiatrist. That's your profession. But what business are you in, you see? Because we have a free enterprise system inside the United States. A lot of people, they have careers, and they look at their careers as being a career. Okay, well what you want to do is you want to make sure that you are able to generate capital in large amounts and pay less taxes, less to zero taxes by handling wealth, using leverage. For instance, all right, I'm going to say that I decided to invest in real estate. I got $250,000 cash. How do you think that I'm going to do that? Well, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to look at where is the latest development that they're going to be putting the newest subdivision. And what's the price of the lots? Then I'm going to go to the bank and I'm going to tell them, look, I need to borrow $100,000 using my $200,000 as collateral. I'm going to take that $100,000. I'm going to buy as many of those lots as I can because when they put them new houses on that lot, the price goes up because I'm bought them, what, $10,000 a lot? I'm bought, what, 10, 15, 20 lots? When they put them houses up, the house is probably $200,000 a piece. I got 10 or 15 houses on a $10,000 lot and with a for sale sign on it in a brand new development. So now people are coming right in right off the bat. So I go to the bank, pay the bank back that $100,000. I'm out. So now we're talking about pure income coming in. But now as that income coming in, I got to hurry up. Because I got to catch a jet. I got to go somewhere because I got to turn that money over again. I got to put that money somewhere. I got to keep this thing going. They got land over here in North Dakota. That's going for a little nothing. I want to know where it's at. What, you know, is it in the path of growth? Tell me about it. Well, let me know about it. So I had to go over there, and I'd put it down, take a look at it, learn everything about it, and see how I can make a profit off it and keep the income generating. Just keep it going, and then go on to the next thing. Now, what I'm doing is I'm becoming successful, and I still got to abide by the rules and regulations and guidelines, and I still got to follow the principles of wealth. So that means that I have to make other people successful as I go along. Now, we're going to come back to some more of this, but I want to lay some things down for you. Pay attention.
I have friends, advisors, and business associates who say I should not tell you this. But this information is important, and I think you should know it. My name is Robert Kiyosaki. I am fourth-generation Japanese-American, born and raised in Hawaii. My mother was a registered nurse, and my father had a PhD in education. He was also the superintendent of education for the state of Hawaii. What broke my heart was that although my mother and father had a great marriage, the only time they ever fought was about a subject called money. In 1970, at the age of 50, my dad was downsized. He never recovered from it. I swore my life would be different. So in school today, we're focused on a thing called SAT, or Scholastic Aptitude Testing. We want to find out how good you are at reading, writing, arithmetic. Very important skills. And how, depending on how well you do with SAT, the next thing they focus on is professional aptitude testing, whether you should be a doctor, a lawyer, fire chief, secretary, or whatever. It's your professional training. But what school fails to focus on or train people on is a thing what I call financial intelligence. We never discuss the subject of money in schools. So what do I mean by financial intelligence? Well, if we gave $10,000 to 100 people, 80 of them, or 80%, would have nothing left at the end of a year. 16% with the same $10,000 might have $10,050, what you would get by putting it in a bank. And 4%, given that same $10,000, would have anywhere from $20,000 to $1 million or more. And that's what I mean by financial intelligence. So when we go to school, we learn to read these things. But we never learn to read these, financial statements or annual reports. We never learn financial literacy in school.
I founded a company called Prime Cable in 1979 with two other people. Today, that company, if it were sold, would sell for about $1.6 billion. I'm a graduate of the University of Texas. I get an MBA in finance. For the last 8 or 10 years, I've been a turnaround specialist. So companies will call me and ask me to help them fix their problems. One of the unfortunate things about being a turnaround specialist is that sometimes there's some fat in the organization that has to get eliminated, and so in the last 3 years, I have fired probably well over 200 people. Most people that I know haven't bothered or figured out a way to go learn the rules so that they will spend the time and understand how to go make money with money. And that's what cash flow is about. It's learning the rules of the game on how to make money with money. One of the great things about money and the rules of the game for money is that they can be taught and they can be learned. One of the things that is very important to me is that my children especially understand the rules of the game of money so that they will never be one of the unfortunate statistics who gets fired in a corporate downsizing by somebody just like me.
When I studied accounting in school, it was possibly the single most boring subject I ever studied. So I had to create a system that was easy enough for me to understand. So these are the basic forms necessary for financial intelligence. One is called an income statement because it has an income and expense, also called a profit and loss statement. There is also a balance sheet, and the balance sheet has assets and liabilities. And these are the very basics for financial literacy or financial intelligence. I soon realized the main cause of financial struggle was due to confusion between the definitions of an asset and a liability. I looked in the dictionary at the definitions of assets or liability. And I got very confused by the dictionary's definition, so I made up my own. My definition of an asset is something that puts money in my pocket. And my definition of a liability is something that takes money out of my pocket. So what caused my mom and dad to struggle financially is my dad, because his banker and his accountant and his real estate agent told him a house is an asset, by this definition, it's actually a liability. He also counted his car as an asset. Yet by this definition, his car was not an asset, it was really a liability. And if these definitions are still too confusing, I simplified it even further. The new definitions are, if I stop working, assets will feed me, and a liability will eat me. And I hope that's simple enough. So the most important thing about being financially literate, or the ability to read numbers, is understanding a thing called cash flow. I can tell the difference between a poor person and a middle-class person by simply looking at their income statements and balance sheets and figuring out which direction the cash is flowing. So I will show you the cash flow pattern of a poor person. Generally, a poor person, all they have is a job. The income comes in from the job, goes down, they pay their rent, clothing, a little food, and goes out the expense column. And this is the cash flow pattern of a poor person. The cash flow pattern of a classic middle class person is a little bit different. Income comes in this way, but what a middle class, they probably have a mortgage, they probably have car payments, they probably have credit card payments. It comes up again through the expense column and then out this way. So what you see here are the cash flow patterns of a poor person versus a middle class person. So the cash flow pattern of the rich is different. The cash flow pattern of the rich flows from the asset column into the income column. So while the poor and the middle class are focusing on income, what the rich are focusing on is the asset column. And the asset column is the great secret of the rich. So for those of us who weren't born rich and what we have is a job, every time money comes in, this is the point of choice. This is where you make the decision to be rich, poor, middle class. If when this dollar comes in and you take the dollar out this way, then it's your decision. If you go and buy yourself a new T-shirt, cappuccino, a new lunch, then you're choosing to expense it right out. You're choosing to be a poor person. If instead, when you get a pay raise or more money, what you do is you go and buy a bigger house, a new car, or you take a vacation on your credit card, then what you are choosing to do then is to be a middle-class person. And if you choose, instead, when the money comes in and you choose to put it in the asset column, then you make that decision to be rich, poor, middle class. By putting in the asset column, at this point, you're choosing to be a rich person. But the choice is up to you, nobody else. Earlier in this tape, you met Keith Cunningham. And Keith told me a story about when he was in graduate school for his MBA. A gentleman named Ray Kroc, who was the founder of McDonald's, came to speak to the class, the MBA class, and asked the class, ladies and gentlemen, what business am I in? And the whole class just cracked up. And they said, well, Ray, of course we know what business you're in. Your business is hamburgers. And Ray said, no, my business is not hamburgers. My business is real estate. So what Ray was saying was that his profession was in sales. He basically sold hamburgers. But his business was down here. His business was real estate. So when I ask most people, what business are you in? Let's say I ask a banker. They say, oh, I'm in the business of banking. So no, your profession is banking. Or I ask a doctor, what business are you in? They say, I'm a doctor. And what the mistake they made is their profession is being a doctor. So your profession is you working for money. And what your business is your money working for you. And the main reason so many people struggle financially is they're not minding their own business. They're minding somebody else's business. So looking at this chart one more time is over here in your profession or your job or being an employee, you're working for somebody else. You're working for the shareholders. Over here, the first person you're working for is the tax department. Here you work for the government. And over here, if you own a house, you're working for the bank because you got a mortgage. So if you want to be rich, happy, and successful, you've got to mind your own business and not work for everybody else.
Corporate America is very exciting for someone in my position. I'm single, a woman, and doing very well, and I'm very happy with my job. But it takes very long hours and hard work to be successful in corporate America. Cash flow helped me realize that I was spending a lot of time making other people rich and that I was stuck in a rat race. So, and learned ways that I could get out of that rat race. And it was great experience for me, a learning experience for me.
My name is Jeff Bassett. I'm an investment broker, and I'm 25 years old. I have a degree in economics and was trained on Wall Street. Now, my average client is between 40 and 50, and they've done nothing for their financial future. Now, me, I have no plans of working past 30. At 30, I'm going to be in the Cayman Islands, trading options and commodities from my yacht. And cash flow showed me how easy it's going to be to achieve.
So what causes financial struggle is that most people who believe in hard work, what they do is they focus on their job. They have, you know, husband and wife working, and maybe one of them will take a second job. So you have three incomes. And so what they're focusing on is income here. So their income goes up, and they believe in hard work. The problem with hard work in the income column is that as your income goes up, so does a thing called taxes go up. So you pay more in taxes, but you feel you've got this raise and it's worth it, and so what you do is you go out and buy a big house or a new car or a new boat because your banker or your accountant tells you that it's an asset. And so this goes up here. And so you're working harder, your expenses are up, your liabilities up, and bam, suddenly you're downsized. And what happens then is you lose your income. But does this go away? The answer is no. Does this go away? The answer is no. And that's what causes financial insecurity or financial struggle. The answer is, if you had focused like the rich do on not working for money but having money work for you, even if you lost your job, your assets will continue to feed you. So having a whole stack of liabilities and no assets, that's what causes financial struggle or financial insecurity.
In the past, what we would do is look at jobs as our security, and that no longer is possible. That is an obsolete thought. That's an obsolete process. Our entire educational system has been set up to prepare us to be really good employees. That no longer works because we don't even know if the company is going to be there within 5 years or 10 years. So what we're discovering is that the life of a company as well as the life of an industry can be shorter than 3 years. So that means that we have to be open to looking at different ways in which we can do what we came to the planet to do. So we need to look at our education and we need to look at our knowledge base in a very different way.
So what most hardworking people do is they focus on the income, working hard at their job, income comes in, and the first line of expense for most people is a thing called taxes. But what the rich do is by having their income come from the asset column, the income comes up this way. And the way the rich avoid taxes is just like a fuel filter on a gas line. What the rich do is they attach a corporation or several corporations. And what a corporation then does is bleed off as many expenses as possible before their income is taxed. And that's how the rich avoid taxes, where a person who is an employee or a W-2er is taxed first. So what the rich do through a corporation is that they take off some of their expenses. What they do is they earn, they spend as much as they can, and they're taxed on what's left. And what the poor middle class do is they work hard, they earn all their money, but the government taxes them, then they try and spend or live on what's left. And that's one of the big differences between the poor, the rich, and the middle class.
Wayne and I own one of the largest real estate schools in the state, and one thing we find about people and students who are entering the real estate business is that we give them the basics of real estate, but they don't know the basics of investing.
Yeah, that's why we're so excited about having the game Cash Flow, because now we can teach the students more about the fundamentals of accounting, investments, and finance, so they'll have the tools that they need to go out and actually do that in the real world.
So one of the secrets of the rich is how they print money. One example is, let's say they buy a house in foreclosure through their attorney's office. They pay $30,000 for it. They mark it up to market value, which is, let's say, $60,000. So they sell it for $60,000, and what they have is in $30,000, which they take back in the form of a note or an IOU. So they've created now $30,000 in their asset column from this one transaction. Or another way of doing it is you take a piece of land, about 80 acres, I paid $100,000 for this whole chunk of land. There was a house on the property, so I chopped off 4 acres and sold the house for $145,000. So I made $45,000 from just selling the house and 4 acres. I then divided up the land into 3 parcels, selling each parcel for $100,000 each, again taking it back in a note or a form of an IOU. So over here, I had now invested $300,000 in my asset column. Or another example I do is called an IPO, initial public offering. I put $10,000 seed money into a company I'm forming. For 1 penny a share, $10,000 comes out to 1 million shares. The moment the company goes public, let's say it goes up to $1, so 10,000 shares then goes to $1 million, which I don't have to pay taxes on until such time as I cash the money. So these are some examples of how the rich print money. And why the poor and the middle class have such a hard time is what they do is they go and work hard at their job. The money comes in here. And if they try and save something, it goes through a thing called their taxes. And it goes through taxes before it can come into this asset column called savings. So this is an example of why the poor middle class has such a hard time saving any money. It's because the government takes a part of it before it gets into their asset column.
We had the opportunity to play the game as a family, and it was really nice to have us all around the table having fun. It was also particularly interesting to see how the game reflected real life. I'm an attorney, once upon a time an engineer, but I was never really taught the basic financial principles that are illustrated by the game.
I'm the accountant in the family. That's why he's never really had to learn the basic fundamentals of the game. And so my background, I'm a CPA, my background is accounting, so I understand the fundamentals as presented in the game. And what was particularly fun for me was I was able to help both Mike and my daughter Shelley understand the concepts that gave them problems. So it was fun because we were able to learn together.
I'm a college student. In school, you really don't learn much about money and financing, and I was surprised how much I really enjoyed this game. I learned a lot about investing money and financing, and I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
So a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called If You Want to Be Rich and Happy, Don't Go to School. It was an international bestseller. And many people think I'm anti-education. Nothing could be further from the truth. As I said, my profession is education. I'm a teacher. I love learning. And so I think scholastic aptitude, which you go to school for, is important, as well as professional aptitude, ability to be an attorney, a lawyer, a doctor, or a secretary. Very important skills. But also, in this world of great change, financial intelligence is excruciatingly important right now. But this is the reason I created the game Cash Flow. But please remember, it's just the fundamentals, the beginning, the foundation. There's a lot more to learn. But always remember this also. No matter which way the economy goes, ultimately, whether you're poor, rich, or middle class, the choice is up to you. One of the foundations of learning is repetition. So please remember this. The more you play this game, the richer you will become.
Okay, Mose, we back. Now, I want to go over the next thing with you, and we're back down to the grassroots again, and it is using what you already got. Now, remember, you are your biggest asset. You have a brain inside your skull and is attached to your shoulders. Now, that brain, you just like the guy said, you have a choice. Now, you have a choice to use that to propel yourself. And there are certain things inside that brain that you can use that are very, very powerful. Apart from understanding and controlling our environment, the words we say, our thoughts, and controlling what we allow in and what we don't, is another force called your imagination. I would like to recommend another book to you. And this book was written by a man named Claude M. Bristol. He wrote a book called The Magic of Believing, The Magic of Believing by Claude M. Bristol. And you can, in order for you to be successful, see, because if you were in a room with a bunch of rich people, all of these people, their conversations and the things they're talking about, the things they're laughing about, and the things they're serious about and all this stuff would be foreign to a poor person. And it's all based on what's inside of the two people's brains. What's in the poor man's brain, what's in the rich man's brain is two different things. And the and usually inside the poor man's brain, he wants to do better. He wants to have more. He really does. And he believes that he just can't quite pull it off. And but inside the brain of the rich, it's just normal. I mean, he just imagines the lifestyle based on the principles that he's following, based on the plan that he has, based on the thinking pattern that he has. So we are not rich. How can we go about taking advantage of this thing? Well, we can use our imagination. We can begin to believe, and to envision, set aside a space of time, small space of time, where we can envision having the things in life that we want to have. Go through the motions inside your mind. Imagine yourself dressed a certain way. Imagine yourself driving a certain car. Imagine yourself living in a certain type of home, and walk around in that home. Look at everything that you want in there. Formulate this in your mind and hold this thing and follow the principle he told you about repetition, and do this every day. Just set aside and imagine yourself being where you want to be, you see. And a lot of us, a lot of people, just simply do not use their imagination. Some of us don't use the brain at all. But anyway, that's a whole different thing. But if you would use the tools that have already been given you, I mean, it doesn't cost anything for you to set aside a little time to imagine yourself successful. And then when you get a little taste of success, imagine yourself being a little bit more successful. And continue on and on and on and formulate your plan. And the next thing you know, that's just the way you think. That's just your normal pattern of life, because you have changed your mind. You've restructured your life based on the fact that you've changed your mind. And even though you may have used the power of your imagination, there's nothing wrong with that. It was given to you at birth. So that's very, very important. I highly recommend that book, The Magic of Believing by Claudine Bristol. There's another book called The Magic of Thinking Big by David Swartz. The Magic of Thinking Big by David Swartz. And in that book there, he tells you how to elevate your thinking. Think big. We're going to get to another part that's very, very important, and that is, why are you doing what you're doing? What have you clearly defined why you think that you need to be rich? Why have you defined that? And if you got the wrong definition of why you want to do it and things are happening for you, you might need to reevaluate your reason for doing what you're doing. Okay? To give you an example of that, I have to look at my own self. My reason for needing an additional $60 million a month is because I got people of African descent inside the United States that look just like me that need assistance. Now, when I say need assistance, I'm not talking about handouts. I'm not talking about coming over there giving you a fish. I'm talking about providing you with the knowledge and everything that you need so that you can fish and do for yourself for the rest of your natural life. Because the day will come when I'll be dead and gone. But if I've spent all my time and all my life giving you free fish, when I'm gone, you stuck like Chuck. Because you still don't know how to provide nothing. Because you're looking for somebody else to give you another free fish. And that's a part of the principles of being success, to make other people successful as you go along, not give other people free stuff as you go along. It didn't say that. And so if we can use our imagination, clearly define why we're doing what we're doing. Now, as you become successful, and this is very, very important, as you begin to accumulate the assets that you need, and you're able to use these assets to accumulate other wealth and transfer and keep the circle of the money and wealth and income going, you want to, you always want to go to wise counsel. You might want to go to a business consulting firm and pay them to structure for you your goals, your plans, your investments, your assets, and all that, and use them. And you might want to use investors, investing firms and stuff. You can do these things. And what that does is that frees you up time-wise to be even more creative, because you are operating off of specific principles and stuff that you have formulated right there in your own brain. You have the basic modus operandi of the strategies that you need. Your thinking is correct. You are gaining more and more and better control of your environment. So therefore, with these principles and things in place, you're able to be of more assistance to more people and help more people become successful as they go along. And as a result of doing that, you'll become more and more successful, you see. And I'm reminded of the statement that was made in the ancient records that say, I wish above all things that you may be prosperous and in good health. Okay? So if you understand one thing, if I don't have nothing, I can't give nobody nothing. If I don't have nothing, I can't help you. There's a reason that if I have something, then I can help you. If I have something, but if I don't have anything, I can't help you.
Prior to the turn of the century, 95% of the people inside the United States were self-employed. Immediately after the turn of the century, we got 95% of the people working for just 5% of the population. What happened? Well, we have a lot of people that pay attention to television. You'll see your politicians will come on there, and they'll talk about the problems that we have, and then they'll talk about they're doing everything that they can to make sure that we provide more jobs. Well, if you're providing more jobs, common sense tells me that there'll be more and more people that are working for somebody else. When are you going to tell us about the people who are self-employed, you know, like the 95% in the beginning when we were prosperous people? But that's not the case. However, what we're here doing is we're providing you an opportunity to be an employer instead of an employee, so that you can provide opportunity for other employers to be self-employed. Go to www.TahakaPowernomics.net. That's www.TahakaPowernomics.net. Once you sign up for the Platinum Matrix, you can receive absolutely free Tahaka Archives Master Library. We'll give that to you absolutely free as a result of you taking responsibility for your own self and then becoming an employer instead of an employee.
Okay, let's get down to another vital point. Now, this is extremely vital, and especially when it comes to people who are involved in network marketing and multi-level marketing. It is extremely important for everybody in the house to be on the same page. You can't have one person who's excited about something and another person, well, I don't want nothing to do with it. I'm broke, you broke. And, I'm just happy just like we is. Could we just stay like we is? Could we? You have a very, very serious problem. And remember, I told you, first you get the power. That is the knowledge. As a result of having the power, now you get the money. As a result of having the money and the power, next, you get the girl. Now, when it comes to that equation, you got to keep it in that order. You cannot get that out of order and hope to be successful with something, because you're going to have a problem. You got to think about what you're doing. And what I recommend for brothers and sisters, if you are single, then you should be going to work. You should be getting yourself together and getting in position, because what we don't want to make the mistake of going out, throwing up a cardboard box, and said, now I got to go get me a wife. And you know, she going to help me make it. No, it doesn't go that way. What you want to do is you want to start with you. You your biggest asset. You want to do everything that you can do to be successful. Now, if you plan to have a wife, you got to be prepared. What do you have that you can come in and tell us, say, well, sit down, honey, let me show you what I'm bringing to the table. And then after I'm done, you can tell me what you got going. Okay? So you're able to lay your cards down on the table. You know everything it is about what you're doing because you're successful at it. You can show that you are successful in what you're doing. If you see somebody that you are interested in and what happened, everything, all the equations fit, the numbers are right, all of that. You're compatible, all that good stuff. And so you can lay it out. Now, it's very important for you to be on the same page. You cannot have one person going in one direction, another person going in another direction, because you're just spinning your wheels. It's just like a car stuck in mud. You know, the engine revving, the tire's spinning, but the car ain't moving. It's sinking deeper and deeper and deeper. So that's very, very important, because you always want to have a team when you're doing things. And just like the gentleman spoke about earlier, he's got his whole family involved in this thing. He's going to get around the table, and they sit down, and everybody around that table has got a part of this thing. Everybody got a part, everybody got a job to do, and everybody around there get paid. And they're teaching the principles of success, teaching the principles of business, and he's passing it on to his children, and his wife know how to handle that thing. And now everybody's rolling, everybody on the same page, because everybody's trying to get from point A to point B. Now, if you met somebody out there that just don't have no ambition whatsoever, don't want nothing out of life, or just have a small way of thinking, and ain't trying to do nothing, and doesn't have an interest in what you are doing at all, and is not willing to take an interest in what you're doing, you got the wrong person. You're not going anywhere. Not if you think or desire to be successful, and especially if you're talking about being rich. Okay, you can forget that. It ain't gonna happen. If you got somebody that you're trying to do something, and they're trying to do everything they can to disrupt you, you got the wrong person. So it behooves you, brothers and sisters, that if you have made this decision to move from the wish-mores to becoming a have-more, you're looking for Mr. Have-more. That's who you're looking for. You're not looking for another wish-more to help you become a have more. That's got a wish more thinking pattern. You don't want that. So that's very, very important, especially when you're talking about getting a team and going on to the next level in achieving the things that you want to achieve and becoming successful. You got to have teamwork, okay? We're going to look at this thing one more time. We'll be right back.
All right. Well, my next guest is an investor, a businessman, a best-selling author, and a motivational speaker. He is best known for his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was the best-selling personal finance book of all time. He has written a total of 15 books, which have combined sales of over 26 million copies. His name is Robert Kiyosaki. Robert, it's an absolute honor to have you joining me today on Follow the Money Weekly.
Oh, I'm honored to be on your program. Like we were saying, you had two of my heroes before, Steve Forbes and G. Edwards Griffin are my heroes.
Robert, years ago, I stumbled onto your work. I was browsing at a bookstore. I can usually be found in the business section of a bookstore anywhere in town. I stumbled across a book that had a very unusual title. It said, if you want to be rich and happy, don't go to school. And I caught my eye. I picked it up. I mean, this was one of your very first books. It offered some very unorthodox financial advice at the time. And since then, your unorthodox approach to teaching financial concepts has turned into a huge empire. I mean, you have books and seminars and financial coaching and the like. In the middle of all this economic crisis that's occurring right now, what is life like for Robert Kiyosaki right now in the middle of all of this?
Well, 2007 and 2010 have been the best years ever as far as my investments goes. Business was a little tough because I was in a lawsuit with my former partners. So that part was tough, but other than that, the business was fantastic. I've never made so much money in such a short period of time. And so it's been just fabulous.
You actually saw the current economic crisis coming. You were writing about it in your book. You wrote a book called Prophecy that the financial media just hammered at the time whenever it came out, where you saw things coming. And I believe you still believe that the major economic crisis we haven't even seen yet. Is that right?
That's my prediction, yes. And Prophecy, you know, on page 7 of Rich Dad's Prophecy, it says you have until 2010 to be prepared. So here it is, 2010, and I like to practice what I preach, and that's why, you know, I have never done so well financially. I was just in the right place, right time, right position. As the markets came down, I thought I died and went to heaven, you know. It's just been fantastic.
Well, for those who have never read your mega bestseller, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, give a brief overview of the book and how your rich dad changed your view of money.
Well, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a true story with my two fathers. I grew up in Hawaii, a fourth-generation Japanese-American. And my poor dad was the head of education for the state of Hawaii. And he was a PhD, great guy, you know, great father. But as you know, school teacher. And school teachers have this idea that the government should take care of you, and the labor unions are king. My father was head of the labor union also. You know, the NEA, National Education Association, is the biggest, single, largest labor union in the world, I think. And they affect our education. And so that was my poor dad's side of the family. I was to go to school, get a safe, secure job, and work for the government, and the government will take care of you, kind of the Obama plan. Whereas my rich dad was a capitalist, and he was my best friend's father, and starting at age 9, he started teaching me about money playing Monopoly. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is this contrast between a socialist and a capitalist. And both good people. And so I had to kind of choose between the two who I was going to listen to. And then in 1973, I went to, and I served my country, unlike Clinton or Bush. And I went to fight in Vietnam, and when I came home, my dad was fired, my poor dad. And, you know, he was unemployed at age 50. And suddenly, I come back from war, and you know, I said, Dad, what should I do, you know, now that I graduated from college, I'm a pilot, I can go fly, what do you think I should do? He says, well, go back to school, get your master's degree, get your PhD, and go work for the government. I said, Dad, I'd rather go back to Vietnam and kill people. It's more honest, you know. So that was kind of when I had to grow up. I was 26 years old at the time in 1973, and I said, I'm going to listen to my rich dad, and I'm going to become an entrepreneur, a capitalist, an investor. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is basically what my rich dad taught me about money, and the reason I'm doing well financially is very simply because, as you know, our school systems have zero financial education. So they, like my poor dad, they believe in giving your money to the pension plan. And you look at why our country is going broke is because we have so many public servants with huge retirement plans. And I just don't, you know, you're entitled to your point of view. I just don't like that attitude. So I'm more a capitalist, not a socialist.
I studied economics at the university level, Robert, and right. Even, you know, throughout high school, of course, there was no economics class that I can recall. Very little personal finance concepts. They don't teach you how to write a check. You know, even in high school, when I got to the economics or the university level and studied economics, again, it was just the socialist Keynesian kind of model that was crammed down my throat. I had to go outside of the university to find any semblance of, you know, what was really going on. It was all done through self-study.
Right.
And one of the things that I really appreciate about your work is that you help dispel many of the financial lies that are out there that many people have been held captive to for years. Some of these things are that you point out specifically, I'm quoting you, go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term. These are concepts that are sacred cows. Talk about how these things are actually, in many ways, lies that hold people financially captive from actually experiencing financial freedom.
Well, I'll try this one, you know, get a job, work hard, save money, live below your means, and buy a house because your house is an asset.
Mm.
You know, if you look at Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the reason I got hate mail from my realtor friends was because I said your house is not an asset. And then I wrote Prophecy in 2002 predicting the bigger stock market crash, which is going to come around 2015, 2016. And, you know, they just get really upset with me because I'm blowing these, I'm shooting these sacred cows right in the field. You know, you look at the people that our schools invite to teach financial education. They invite bankers in, and they invite financial planners. Now, I'm sure they're good people, but those are the very people who work for the people that brought on the financial crisis. They work for the Goldmans, and they work for Merrill Lynch's, and they work for Bank of America's. And so these school teachers who wouldn't know a good deal from a bad deal don't know good education from bad education. And so we wonder why we have so many people today who are homeless. I mean, millions of homes have been in foreclosure. And so in 1997, when Rich Dad Poor Dad came out, it's your house is not an asset, you know, people would call me up and say, obviously, you haven't gone to college. And I said, I did go to college. Well, you don't know anything about economics. I said, what does an asset versus liability have to do with economics, idiot?
Right.
So they just don't understand it. And this is my whole complaint, that there's a difference between communism and socialism, and what we're teaching is communism. And what I'm not against communism per se. I'm not a you know, right winger, all this stuff. But basically what Marx said was that we have the proletariat. And the proletariat are people without any assets. They have nothing. And so you have the you have the gentry, you know, the I forgot what they call them, but the rich guys, and then you have the proletariat. And our schools are pumping out proletariat. They're people who get a job, but they don't own anything. They think their house is an asset. They think their job is an asset. They think their 401k is an asset. Those are all unfunded liabilities. And so when I talk to people like that, they don't understand that I'm actually criticizing the fact that most of our school teachers are communists. They don't even know it. They don't know it. That's the problem. And my poor dad was a good man. He thought he was a socialist. He was really a communist. He owns nothing. A job is not an asset. Your house is not an asset. Your 401k is not an asset. That's the whole thing. I'm not saying that one's right or wrong. I'm saying, when are you going to educate people? You know, we wonder why we have so many people today dependent upon the government to take care of us. That's the real problem.
Well, and the average, you know, and you know this, Robert, the average yuppie retirement plan today is a house and a 401k. They're both government controlled. Which makes it very, very difficult going forward. But then you always have that statistic that you see over and over again where 95% of Americans retire dead or dead broke when they reach age 65. Whatever we're being taught today just simply doesn't work. That's why the unorthodox concepts that you talk about in your book is very interesting, that not only were you saying these things all along, but right now in the middle of the economic crisis, you know, you're doing better than ever.
Yeah. This is absolutely fantastic. And if you had a little financial education, you wouldn't be in this trouble. But I'll say it again, the problem with the education system is run by the NEA, the National Education Association, what Steve Forbes calls the National Extortion Organization Association. And my father was the head of the teachers union. And as a young kid, I didn't really have to be that good at economics, but I knew a communist when I saw one. And a communist, I'm not saying they're bad people, this is really the strange thing. What you do is you have what Marx talked about was the war between the bourgeois and the proletariat. And I said, what you guys are doing is you're pumping out proletariat with nothing. When you teach a kid your house is an asset, you're lying to them. When you teach them your 401k is an asset, you're lying to them. You're lying. And that's what I get upset about. I don't care if you're a communist or a socialist or a fascist. But just don't be stupid one. You know, I mean, I don't care if you're a Protestant, a Mormon, a Jew, a Buddhist, or Hindu. You know, it's not your choice. Just don't be a stupid one. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, Robert, I mean, you know, Steve Forbes wrote a book called How Capitalism Will Save Us. You mentioned he was a guest on the program not too long ago. Why don't you explain for our audience what the difference between, you know, because you brought up communists quite a bit, the difference between a capitalist and a communist. What's the difference?
Right. That's a good question because I fought for capitalism twice. I didn't fight for socialism or communism. I went to Vietnam twice. And only after I went to Vietnam did I start saying, what the heck's a commie? The Marines aren't the smartest guys on earth, you know. I started studying it. I said, wait a minute. You know, so what Marx was talking about was how the proletariat was being oppressed by the bourgeois. And the proletariat is basically a working class person with nothing. When I started looking, I said, that's my dad. These guys are the intellectuals. There's nothing wrong with intellectuals. They come out of school, they get a job. A job is not an asset. Mm. You work for the capitalist. I mean, you actually set your child up to work for the capitalist rather than become a capitalist. See, my rich dad was training me to be a capitalist. And then they have nothing. And they're teaching their house is an asset, which is not. It's the bank's asset. And they have a 401k, which is, you know, the bank's asset again. I said, these poor buggers, you guys are actually training people to work for the capitalists. And why are you angry at them?
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is, why not give a child a choice? Do you want to come out of school a communist or a capitalist? Make up your mind. And what Steve is talking about is, if we train people to be capitalists, we wouldn't have such a big problem.
Mm.
And it's the same thing with rich dad, poor dad, between a socialist or a communist and a capitalist. And I have assets. I own businesses. I own commercial real estate. I own golf courses, resorts. I have oil wells. I am a capitalist. But I didn't ever want a job. And that's what our schools are teaching kids to become, to come out and work for the rich. Why don't we train people to be rich? Why don't we teach them to be capitalists?
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money and hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly's, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. and they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folks. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
He teaches people to become millionaires. Today, hear his money-making secrets.
It was life-changing and just woke me up.
Went from 48 to 100,000 one year.
What do the rich teach their children about money that the poor and middle class do not? Robert Kiyosaki teaches people to be millionaires. He teaches people to be millionaires. That's how he earned the nickname, the millionaire school teacher. And he says that the rich have a very different way of thinking about money that anybody can learn. His book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, has been on the New York Times business bestseller list for 8 months, and his unique advice may change the way you look at your money. This is a really important show. If you like money, if you need money, if you'd like to have some money, this is a show for you. Take a look.
I've been rich and I've been poor, and I like rich much better. I found out that the secret to success is not hard work or luck. I found a new way of thinking that works for me. Do you remember these here? These are nylon and Velcro surfer wallets. When I was 26, I began marketing these products worldwide, and that's how I became a millionaire before I was 30. Besides building businesses, I also invest in stocks as well as real estate. I was able to retire at the age of 47. Today, I teach other people how to build businesses or to be investors. I must say I owe much of my financial success to a man I call my rich dad, who was my childhood best friend's father. He made me realize that there's a very big difference between what the rich teach their kids about money that the poor don't teach their kids about money. My real dad, or my biological father, was the head of education for the state of Hawaii. I call him my poor dad simply because he was a high-paid government official. He made a lot of money, yet at the end of every month, he was broke. My rich dad, on the other hand, was my best friend's father, and he ultimately became one of the wealthiest men in the state of Hawaii. And by the way, my rich dad was a high school dropout. One dad had a habit of saying, "I can't afford it." My rich dad, on the other hand, forbade his son and I from ever saying, "I can't afford it." My poor dad always said, "Our house is an asset, and it's our largest investment." My rich dad said, "Your house is not an asset, it's a liability, and if it's your largest investment, you're in financial trouble." My poor dad believed in job security. He said, look for a company that had excellent pay, good benefits such as medical, vacation, and other types of perks. My rich dad said that that entitlement mentality kept people financially weak and financially needy. My poor dad always said, find a safe, secure job and work your way up the corporate ladder. My rich dad said, why not just own the ladder? I decided to listen and learn from my rich dad. The rest is history.
Well, let's go through some more of Robert's points about what he says. The rich teach their children that the poor and middle class do not. Main difference, you say, between the rich and poor lies in what we teach our children about
That's
money.
Correct.
Really?
Very much.
It's a mentality. It's a total way of thinking, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
And it's really easy to change if you're willing to change the way you think. For instance, my poor dad was a very good man for Japanese. He was 6'4", very smart, academic genius. But he always said to me, you know, go to school, get good grades, get a job, and work hard. Save money. And my rich dad said, well, if you want to be rich, that's not the way you do it. And he, instead of working for money, my rich dad taught me how to have money work hard for me. And that's why I've only had a job 4 years of my entire life. Other than that, I'm building companies or I'm investing, and that's all I'm doing.
Well, the subject of money is taught at home, not in school, you say, because most of us learn about money from our parents, and it's only good if you have a rich dad mentality.
My message to people is, you know, why struggle for money when you don't have to? You know, it's that really simple if you have good advice. The problem is money is not taught in school. And so what we do is we oftentimes follow in our parents' footsteps. We may do different jobs, but we oftentimes follow in the same financial patterns. And my rich dad used to say, you know, he says, you can't end poverty by giving somebody money. Giving a poor person money keeps them poor longer.
Yeah.
And that's what breaks my heart, because I want to help people
change the way they think about money.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most important things is that I noticed, I think my rich dad and my poor dad was the vocabulary. My poor dad, you know, was a PhD in education, very smart man, but he had the vocabulary of a school teacher. And my rich dad had the vocabulary of a rich man. And so when I say to people, what's the first
thing? What do you mean by vocabulary?
Well,
I know what the word means, but
right.
What kind of vocabulary?
Well, I sit around the dinner table and listen to both dads, and one would talk about algebra and geometry and trigonometry. Nothing of this ever made me any money. Mm-hmm. And my rich dad would sit there and he'd talk about return on investment, assets, liabilities, discounted cash flows, et cetera.
So and a lot of people, what you just said about your house is a liability, it's not an asset. Most people think it is their biggest investment.
Yes, and that's one of the biggest middle class traps. They say, my banker says my house is an asset. And my rich dad would say, if you can read a financial statement, you'll see, you can read, that your house is actually a liability. I'm not saying don't buy a house, and I like big houses, and I like the finer things of life. Just don't call a liability an asset. And what's trapping the middle class is they're buying liabilities they think are assets.
I like what you say in the book, but this is interesting, too, because I've always been a person who lived beneath my means. Now it's kind of hard to see. It doesn't matter. But I've always been a person who, because I just was reading about how the Chevy Chevette was the worst car, one of the worst cars ever made, and I had one of those little tin cans because that was the thing that I could pay cash for and not have to, pay interest and so forth.
Right.
So I've always believed in living beneath the means until you could really afford
That's correct.
For stuff, mainly because I hate bills.
Right.
Just hate bills. And you say one of the mistakes that middle class and poor people do is they try to look rich.
Yes.
So those are the first people to go buy the furs, the diamonds, the big TVs, and all the stuff, correct?
Right. My rich dad called it looking good and going nowhere.
Love that. Yeah. My grandmother used to call it not a pot to piss in, but anyway, that's about it. Kind of the same thing.
I'm glad you said that.
You heard that too. Okay, they'll edit that somewhere. But anyway, it's the same principle. You have all
yes.
this stuff. I know when I see people out and they got all the stuff and all the things and but then when they go home, what?
They have bills.
They have bills.
And they worry and their health goes down and, it's not worth it. The thing that I think most people don't realize is that there's only two kinds of money problems, basically. One's not enough money and one's too much money. And they're both problems. And you really know, you have to know how to handle too much money, as I'm sure you do right now. Otherwise, if you...
Watching it all the time.
Had
a bad week last week. Yeah.
But it's a different problem.
Yeah, it's a different kind of problem, yeah.
So when you have no money, you have to have a plan to eventually have plenty of money. And then when you have plenty of money, you got to shift plans.
Yes.
And so that's why people who win the lottery all of a sudden get all this plenty of money, and they go broke again.
And overwhelmed by it.
Right, and they go... because they've never understood how money works.
Paul Rogers says he changed from a poor dad to a rich dad and now wakes up every day with a new outlook on life. Here's what Paul's story is. Paul Rogers, a divorced father of two, was making $48,000 a year as a firefighter and living paycheck to paycheck.
By the time I paid the house payment, the child support, the car payment, food and utilities, with the two kids, it was really tough.
Last year, Paul discovered Robert Kiyosaki's financial plan.
He stresses three main things. Number one, set up a home-based business. Number two, get control of your taxes. Number three, take that extra income and buy more assets with it.
He followed the steps and set up his own home-based business. It was easier than he thought and only cost him $300. With that extra income from his new home business and a pay raise from the firehouse of $300 a month, he started to buy homes that were in foreclosure.
You can purchase them under value, go in, carpet, paint them, fix them up, turn and sell them, and even make more money.
With the money he made from selling those houses, Paul bought stocks, mutual funds, IRAs, and even set up an educational account for his children.
It has changed my outlook on life because this has given me more time freedom with my kids and more financial freedom. And the best thing is my income has gone from about $48,000 to a little over $100,000 in a one-year period.
Wow.
Wow.
I bet you're impressed with yourself.
I'm impressed with Rich Dad, Poor Dad in the book. It's just an unbelievable book. You're going to have a great response from all your viewers on this.
Really? You sound like an infomercial, but we're not. So it obviously has changed your life, your outlook, and what you will now pass on to your children.
Yeah, really, the educational system that I had growing up didn't teach me about debt, credit card debt, liabilities, college loans, getting that fancy car right out of school. But what Brett and Chelsea are learning now is that, hey, make your money work for you, don't work for money. So it's been a big life-changing experience for me.
So what exactly, because now people are going, what exactly caused you to go from 48 to 100 in a year?
Well, that's a very good question. I think what it was, number one, I sat down and I actually wrote out what my goals were and what my dreams were, and I had never done that before. And when I actually wrote those on paper, I said to myself, well, how am I going to get there? What do I need to do? And that's what probably a lot of the viewers are going to say, yeah, this all sounds good, but tell me the answer. Well, the answer for me was I set up a home-based business. By doing so, it only cost me $300. I'm generating income from that and taking that income, buying real estate, put it in to the stock market, stuff like that, buying more assets in my life and having my money work for me.
But you also kept your other job.
I'm still a full-time fireman. I plan on keeping that. I thoroughly enjoy my job.
Yeah. We love firemen.
Yeah. Have me on the singles show.
Yeah, I will. Wait a minute. You don't need to.
Yeah, I'm here.
You don't need a show.
Call the Oprah Show and give me a call.
Okay. So your whole life has changed.
Yeah, pretty much. I've got just a great outlook. I mean, when I wake up every day now, it's just like there's all kinds of opportunity out there. But it's really taking that first step and saying, you know, why am I here? You know, what do I want to do? Where do I want to go?
Well, one of the things you say is that the poor pay their bills first, the rich pay themselves first.
That's a really tough one, but it makes people kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Because from Richest Man in Babylon says pay yourself first. But what most people do is they pay the bills first and they never pay themselves anything. And that's a discipline I had to get into, was I always pay myself first, even when I had no money. And when I have all these bill collectors calling me, I use them as inspiration. You know what I mean?
Really?
Oh, when they're hounding, the government's hounding you, bill collectors calling, because I've been broke, so I can understand what it feels like to be broke. When those guys are calling you, instead of, you know, shrinking and going into the shell and eating my pizza,
yeah,
I use it as motivation to go out and make more money. So I use my bill collectors as motivation, and that's why I paid myself first, even though sometimes
what
I
wasn't
paying.
What would you pay yourself?
I always bought assets. I'd buy a house or I'd put money in the bank or things like this, but it was just a habit. Exactly what you're talking about. It's up here.
It's about changing the way you think.
You see,
that's what the whole book is about.
That's it, because we're our biggest asset. We're also our biggest liability.
We are.
Yeah, we are.
I know. I read that.
Thank you.
Okay, during the commercial break, you said what? Say it again.
You say that you can pay yourself first, pay your bills second, but if you do that, you still can't afford to buy a house. Say you say you bought a house. How am I going to get somebody to loan me the money to buy a house when I can't pay fully pay my bills as I'm paying them now? When I'm paying the minimum payment, let's say that.
He doesn't understand the principle of pay yourself first.
Loan?
He's with a lot of people out there who are saying, look, I got the bill collectors calling. I'm scared to answer the phone because I don't have the money. So how am I going to now give myself money first when I got these people knocking down my door? That's what all these people are shaking their heads to.
Right.
They're thinking easy for you to say from where you're sitting now.
Well, I sell. I'm a salesman. I go to work every day and I try to sell more and more and more to make more and more money, but that money's still going to my bills, so I'm not getting called by the credit collectors.
One thing that Paul said right there, he starts a home-based business. The tax laws are written against. Tax laws are not equal. And if you want, what I'm saying is you've got to get educated here. So the tax laws are not equal. So if you're an employee and you work harder and harder, the government's going to take 50% no matter what. So by being a business owner, which is Paul did, he has tax advantages that the middle class and poor do not have.
The taxes are the biggest expense in your life as a salesman. The more money you make, the more the government takes. So get control of your taxes first by setting up a home-based business. Take that tax savings now, pay down debt, and buy more assets in the real estate. And you said, well, I've got credit problems. I'm not going to be able to get a loan. Find a motivated seller. Find owner financing. There's all kinds of opportunities out there. Most of society, though, will watch this show, and then they'll go back to just sitting at home at night. You really have to change what you're doing in your life. If you're not happy where you're at financially, you've got to do something drastically.
Just saving money and investing is not enough. There is a complete mindset that goes on. I think that's what these people who came.
Paul was saying, because we all have the mentality in this country, you work harder, it will pay off in the end. It does not, because the government always gets theirs.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the real estate is the least taxed income you can get. So when my wife and I were struggling, we saved $6,000. We bought that house. Thing went from $46,000 to $105,000. We had $50,000.
But I think when people think of real estate, they think about the house that they would want to live in. So
that's
you start out buying something that you wouldn't necessarily want, and you use that to build more income.
That's
for
what she did. She bought seven.
That's
my idea. I want to buy a three flat, live in the basement, rent off the top two apartments.
Good.
And
think it.
Have them pay my mortgage for me.
Good.
But I still need to come up with the original capital to buy the place.
That starts with paying yourself first.
Hey, Oprah.
people should be teaching in school, because I swear to you, we've all been taught be responsible, pay your bills first so that the people don't, you know, call you or not harassing you and so forth. What were you going to say, Paul?
I would say I was dealing with the real estate, what Robert's talking about, but for $300, I set up a home-based business. Anybody in this room can do that, and you're going to save money on your taxes, number one, while you're generating income on your business. Once you've got that income coming in, you can do all the real estate that you want then. So it's really just getting out there and looking at the different opportunities. $300 investment. Can't beat it.
Okay, Moore, we're back. Let me give you a synopsis of an average day in my life. I'll get on this computer and I'll post articles, I'll post my ads, I'll put out information, and while I'm doing that, the phone rings all during the day. These are people who either have donated to Tahaga's Archives or who may have a question about the stuff that we discuss on the radio. That's what I do, because I'm involved in the principles that I'm teaching, and that is to, in order for you to be successful, you have to help other people be successful as you go along. So that's what I do. Now, there are days when it gets a little bit more hectic than other days. And there's also a time period when I say I need to take a little time off. And I have no idea why I tell myself something about taking the time off, because I never do. But at least I said I was going to. However, moving right along is nothing like being able to help somebody get in a position to change their life and to be making progress, and to contact you and to thank you for the information that you have given in it to them. And it, you know, I become excited about the stories that the brothers and sisters tell me about what they have learned and what they have used based on what they have learned as a result of the principles that I'm sharing with them. And the new little opportunity that we have now for the Platinum Plus Matrix, the brothers are calling about that too, and they're excited, and we host the conference calls every Wednesday night so that they can bring other people that they're trying to make successful. So this thing is, you know, this is my passion, this is what I do, and I'm happy. I'm happy every day, and I look forward to waking up what few hours that I do sleep, because I'm not a heavy sleeper. I'm a light sleeper, and I love what I'm doing. I have a passion for what I'm doing, and it touches my heart to know that I am making a difference in the lives of my people. So that alone, to me, makes me a very, very wealthy man. That, to me, that's the way I see it. However, I try to teach brothers and sisters that everything that I do should be duplicatable, and because there's no reason in the world why we all should not be happy. You know, if you got something that you are doing, you want to be happy about it. A lot of us have jobs that we go to. We get up, we own this regimen. We get up when we don't want to get up. We go somewhere we don't want to go. We do things once we get there that we don't want to do, and we are constantly looking at the clock in order to get out of there. You have to change that. You have to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. So what I did was I understood some things. The last job I had, when I went in that job, I was trying to hurry up, get the application filled out. They was trying to tell me about all the benefits and stuff. That was going out of one ear, coming in one ear and going out the other, because I was there for a specific purpose. I had a plan. I stayed there 5 years. Now, people who had been working for this company 10, 15, 20 years had never accomplished anything. In less than 2 years, I think it was about a year and a half, I had bought, which I thought was an asset at the time. I didn't know any better on that. Bought a brand new truck. Then bought a house. And then all of a sudden, all the people were, well, get me a house. I said, how long have you been here? I've been here for 12 years. I mean, well, what happened to the other 11? Well, you should have been. You know, so we got all these people now that's deciding to, well, okay, we're going to watch this dude. What are you doing? He's coming to work. He's happier than everybody else. No matter what time he's scheduled to come to work, he's excited. When he gets here, he does a fantastic job. And he's got this little business that he's running here, and he's making more money than everybody else. And he's always happy. It's because what I was doing was I was using certain principles. Number one, the only reason you should work for another man is to acquire seed capital for investment. That principle was in place. It was actually working. I took the seed capital and invested in something that everybody on the job liked, even the superintendent. They were my customers. The only opposition that I had was from people who looked like me. They were like, well, you're not letting me do that right there. We down here in the bucket. He needs to be down here with us, too. And he's trying to get out of that bucket. And from with the rest of the crabs. And y'all ain't doing nothing about it. We got to drag him down. But they couldn't drag me down because I was too excited. Anyway, I managed to get in a position where it really didn't matter whether I went to work or not. And something happened on the job, and they said, well, we're going to have to fire you. I said, okay. No problem. I'll see you guys later. So I left. And now all the naysayers, they're looking. Well, he still got everything that he had, and some kind of way he don't have this job. He's going to lose it. We'll come back tomorrow, and we'll come back the next day, and the next day, and the next day. We're going to keep our eye on him because we're looking for him to fail, and some kind of way he's got to fail. Otherwise, he will have proved everything that he said was correct. We're going to have to call on the Lord to destroy him so he won't be correct in all of this kind of business. But anyway, when you have something that belongs to you, that you created, and that's aiding you and benefiting you and other people, then your reason for going to the place that you didn't want to go and doing the things that you didn't want to do, all that changes for you. You have a brand new project. You're working on something. All of a sudden, boom, you generate some money from something that you created. Now, it's up to you to make it as big as you want to make it in order to get out of the holding pattern that you're in. Because the only reason you should have been there in the first place was to get seed capital for investment in your own. And if you're going there day in and day out, week after week, month after month, and you haven't done anything, you are in what is called a holding pattern in life, and there's no way to be happy in a holding pattern in life. The only security that you have in a job is as long as you're able to perform. every animal on this earth is out in the forests and the jungles and stuff. These animals are free. You are given this creation to have dominion of it, over it. But yet, we have allowed society to enslave us and to imprison us and to imprison our minds and imprison our bodies and cause us to have a disharmony in our relationship with our loved ones, in jail and prison and death, over trying to make it. Wife go to work. Husband, he's unemployed. He's cheating. Husband go to work. Wife unemployed. She's cheating. And next thing you know, boom, everything blew up. You see. Take control of your life. Take control of your finances. And if you take control of your finances inside the United States, you can actually get on with the business of living instead of spending all of your time making a living. See, everybody, the rich people and the poor people have 24 hours in a day. But what you do with your time will determine what your future will be like. One of the first questions I asked when I got to that company is, how much overtime can I get? Why did I ask that question? I asked that question because I was on a mission. I was like a beast up in there. I couldn't wait to get there to go to work. I would even go there early. Why? Because I had to catch my customers. The one that was getting off of work, I told him I'd be there early. I said outside sometimes 45 minutes to an hour before I go to work. And I made $200-$300 before I go to work. Then when it's time for me to go to work, I'm excited. I even forgot that it was Friday. And it happened because I changed my mind. I took paper and pencil. I put it down on paper. I planned the plan and executed the plan and kept on going. And I'm still standing here right now today. I had one of the brothers come by. I think it was about two or three weeks ago. He rode by. We have this train right down the street from my house. And the cars were backed up, and he found himself sitting right out in front of my house. I was sitting out on the lawn chair relaxing, and he was on his way back to the grindstone, and he seen me sitting outside relaxing with the music, little jazz playing, and calling myself being off, which I'm never off. But he said, you know, they still got your job waiting on you. I said, well, go ahead and tell them to take a picture of me and put it up in the area. And I act like I'm there. Because I ain't coming back. He laughed. He thought it was quite funny. But anyway, blessed is he that has his own. Blessed is he that has his own. You were given a brain. And you are responsible for it. Not somebody else. You. You're going to make the decision. If someone can tell you, talk to you about what's true until they blew in the face. But until you decide what truth is, there is no truth. You create your own truth. You use what you already got. See, we're not talking about something that you don't have. You already have a brain. You already have an imagination. You can speak. You can hear. You can talk. You can walk. And we can't quite figure out that how there are people who can't see. There are millionaires. There are people who can't speak. There are millionaires. There are people who have an arm missing. You don't have an arm missing, a leg missing. They're millionaires. You may even know some of them. I know one personally. His name is Stevie Wonder. I used to know the other, and he passed now. His name was Ray Charles. and the list goes on and on and on. So, in my opinion, there's absolutely no excuse, and the only thing is you just have to change your mind. But if you don't want nothing, you are listening to the wrong broadcast. If you are opposed to making money, you are listening to the wrong broadcast. Now, when I say money, I'm not talking about debt. You take debt and use debt correctly. So you're getting real money. Some silver and some gold and some do some things with it. Some little stuff, whatever you decide to use to make you money. Now, when you have a business of your own, you want to treat this just like your own child. And for a woman, just like the child you birthed out of your womb. This your baby. You want to learn everything that you can about it. You want to be an expert with it. You want to use it to generate what you need, because we are a free capitalistic society which operates under a free enterprise system. Now, we don't want to get bogged down tonight, because we're talking about finance. We don't want to get bogged down tonight about, you know, the corruption of America and all that. No. We ain't talking about none of that. What we're talking about is being able to put food on the table, put clothes on your back, put shoes on your foot, put water for you to drink, and to make sure that you remove stress from your life, because stress is a killer. Remove depression. Remove anything that's not conducive to you having and being happy on a daily basis. You see, today is Monday. Tomorrow is Tuesday. You should be looking excited. You should be in a position where you could, I'm looking forward to tomorrow, because tomorrow is a brand new day. I got the sunshine, I got the rain, I got the snow, I got whatever it is that you have another opportunity at this thing. You have another 24 hours. Based on what you decide right there in your own brain that's sitting on top of your shoulders, you change your mind. Evaluate everything. Somebody come to you and, well, you know, the law says you got to give 10% of your income to the church. Or the, you know, God said the rich ain't going to inherit the kingdom of heaven. And all these things. I tell you what you do. Go find some extremely wealthy and powerful people and tell them that and see what they tell you. They'll tell somebody, say, look, what I need you to do is take him, carry him outside, put him in my limousine, take him over here to my yacht, and sail him right back where he came from. Drop him off. So you change your thinking. Now, it ain't all about being rich, because, like I told you, you can't help anybody if you don't have anything to help anybody with. You have nothing from nothing, leave nothing. If you ain't got nothing, how you going to help somebody? You can't.
Well, and I think what you've done, Robert, is, and I think very effectively well, is you've communicated that, look, here's how we solve this, but since it's not going to be solved anytime soon, you might as well learn the rules of the rich, which you talk about in your book, The Conspiracy of the Rich. So kind of the new rules of money that go against the old, you know, orthodox teachings of, you know, save money, work hard, get a job, go to school, all this kind of stuff. That doesn't work for most people because they end up dead or dead broke when they reach retirement. So you begin, right. You kind of say, well, if you can't beat them, join them. And then so what you do is you actually begin to learn the rules of the game, which we call here at our organization the rules of the game. You have to understand where things are going. And one of the things that's very controversial that you talk about is debt. Because many people, again, say pay off your debt, get out of debt. But you actually teach that it's very difficult to become extremely wealthy without understanding leverage. You talk about how debt and taxes work for those who have a financial education. In fact, on page 59 of your book, Conspiracy of the Rich, you state that one of the new rules of money is to learn how to use debt. Talk about that.
Well, you have to go back in history, or economic history, right? We had the Federal Reserve, which was 1913. And in 1913, the Fed was created, but so was the IRS. It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, the same year. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, then 1944, we went on the Bretton Woods. We went back on a quasi-gold standard. FDR took us off in 33. Then we went on it in 1944 with the Bretton Woods. And then 71, Nixon took us off the gold standard. So the dollar became, after 1971, pure debt. And by the way, as you know, no fiat currency ever survives more than 40 years. So we're at 40 years right now. Next year is 40 years.
Right.
We're gone. So the dollar is going to go down. So the only salvation, since the dollar was debt, use debt. You know, use fire to fight fire. So today I'm a rich man because I use debt, which is tax-free money. So I use debt and the tax laws to make me richer, whereas if you're a college graduate, debt and taxes make you poorer. So I just think it's kind of interesting. You know, I mean, all I'm saying with education, you should give a kid a choice. Do you want to have debt and taxes make you rich, or you want debt and taxes make you poor? Which one? Which one do you want? And because you have a choice. It's a free country. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying one is right or wrong. I'm not saying being a communist is right or wrong, because there's a lot of poor people who are exploited by the rich. That's granted. But by not being educated financially, they're going to get more exploited.
Robert, how specifically do you use debt to grow wealth?
Well, you're looking at it right now. Well, effective interest rates are at zero. Okay, so I just bought, let's use a round number, an apartment house, $10 million. That's tax-free money. On top of that, all that money that comes to me is my money, plus I get depreciation, I get appreciation, I get amortization. It's all tax-free money. It's all tax-free money. I pay it back, not with my money, but my tenants' money. My tenants pay for my debt for me. So I want as much debt as possible. So good debt is debt that somebody else pays for me. Bad debt is debt on my house, because I got to pay for the debt on my house. I have two houses, two personal residences, one in Arizona and one in Waikiki. But those are bad debt. I have lots of good debt. So just now, interest rates going down so low, in an hour, I have a meeting with another broker. I'm going after another piece of real estate, 100% debt financed. The problem is, if you have no financial education, you should not do what I do. That's all I'm saying. You know, you shouldn't attempt brain surgery at home if you haven't been trained to be a brain surgeon. So I use debt to get rich because it's all tax-free money. Plus, on top of that, the government incentivizes me to get in debt. So I pay zero tax and make millions of dollars every year. Whereas if I'm a doctor, I'll pay 60% of my money in tax. That's not intelligent.
So at the end of the year, Robert Kiyosaki, Inc. is not paying any kind of taxes?
No. Legally. Legally, because I use debt and I invest in real estate. And you see, taxes are a government incentive program. So if you're an idiot, they're going to tax you. If you're a capitalist, they're going to give you tax incentives. I just bought a sailboat, you know, 60-footer. I just got back last night from Hawaii. We sailed from California to Hawaii. I got an 80% write-off on it.
Wow.
The government's buying me my boat. The reason for that is I own a boat charter company. So the boat goes into the charter business. It's an asset because it makes me money. If it was my personal boat, I get no tax deduction for it.
So the IRS tax code, whenever you look at the IRS code, it actually contains within it all of the things. It basically teaches you how to not pay taxes, doesn't it?
Yes, that's exactly it. It taxes people who are employees. You know, people go to school or go to a job. And it taxes people who become professionals, like doctors and lawyers. Doctors and lawyers, after the 86 Tax Reform Act, pay the highest taxes possible. And guys like me, who are the dummies in school, the C student, but because I'm an entrepreneur and I don't have a job and I'm not a professional, I get the tax incentives because I buy real estate because the government needs me to provide housing, and as an entrepreneur I create jobs. So the tax code is actually a stimulus plan. It always has been and always will be, but our schools don't teach you that. They told you to go to school, get a job, get a house, stay out of debt, pay off your credit cards. That is really bad advice.
Mm-hmm.
But America is a fabulous place for the financially educated. It's a horrible place if you went to school.
Hmm.
Hence the title of my first book. I'm Rich and Happy. Mm-hmm. Don't go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're taught to go out, get a job, and work for the man, and I'm the man.
You are hitting on some topics right now that many people know exist. You know, this book, Rich Dad's Conspiracy of the Rich, there really is a conspiracy going. It's one of the things we talk about. That's why our show is called Follow the Money, because we know that if you want to get to the truth, you have to follow the money. And, you know, what we see going on right now, this whole financial crisis has at its very root all kinds of issues that are conspiratorial. And one of the things that I think that, you know, you bring out in your book is the fact that for the average person out there who is working, you're bringing it up, you're saying it over and over right now, that they're basically getting hosed. When they put money into a mutual fund or they put money into their 401k, where's that money going?
To me. Where do you think the mutual fund companies, you know, where do you think I get my money from? I get it from pension plans. Where do you think the capitalists get their money from? They get it from the working class people. So all I'm saying is, you know, in conspiracy, it's got to make a decision. You want to be on the poor side, the proletariat, with nothing. Or you want to be on the side of the rich. If you want to be on the poor side, then just go to school, become a doctor, become a lawyer. And you won't learn anything about what I know. That's my rich dad. My poor dad was a guy who said, I came back from Vietnam after my second tour. I was a pilot out there, and I got, you know, knocked down a number of times. My dad says, go back to school, get your job, and become a PhD and work for the government. I said, so I got a good pension. And what's killing this country are those sick and stupid pensions that Congress pulls themselves in. So I'm a hardcore capitalist. I make no apologies for that. That's why I love Steve Forbes and G. Edwards Griffin. I mean, that book, Creature from Jekyll Island, that is a must-read. That is a primer to understand why we're in this mess financially. And then you can sit there and go, well, whose side am I on? I want to be the victim or I want to be on the rich side. I made my decision years ago. I'd rather be rich. I don't want to be a proletariat. You know, I mean, I don't want to be working class. If you do, go to school and get a job.
On page 147 of your book, Conspiracy of the Rich, you list the four basic investment categories. You say, number one, there's businesses. Number two, there's income-producing investment real estate, which you've brought up. Number three, there's paper assets like stock, bonds, annuities, insurance. And then four, there's commodities like gold, silver, which have been all the rage lately. Why don't we talk about these just real briefly, each of these basic four investment categories. You know, when people talk about diversifying, you know, the old concept of, you know, diversify, put a little money in Microsoft, put a little money in IBM, and there you go. Well, I mean, you're talking about investing across multiple asset platforms. So having some money in commodities, some in paper, some in real estate, some in business. I mean, you're talking about spreading the wealth, so to speak. And I've always found that that is really the most important and probably the easiest way to protect your money from Uncle Sam, because if you're diversified that way, you can handle if they change the rules. If they change the rules and confiscate gold, they change the rules and confiscate retirement funds. Well, if you have all your money in a house and a 401k, you're a sitting duck.
Right.
But if you have them spread out across various asset classes, then you can handle when the rules of the game change.
Well, you don't even have to do that. You just look at the rules right now, the worst asset class possible are paper assets, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and savings. They're the worst. That's why the person with no financial education is already in the worst asset class possible. And then what happens is financial planners will tell you to diversify. What they're really saying is diversify. You're not diversified. Like, you could be buying, let's say, well, invest in real estate through a REIT, REIT. That's still a paper asset. You could buy Exxon, but you're still in paper assets. I buy the hardcore oil. I own the oil well. I want the production. I don't want the paper asset. So the most people who are diversified are actually diversified. They're not diversified at all. And it's really a scam. It's a sleight of hand. It's fraud.
What are your thoughts now, saying all that? What are your thoughts and view on the outlook on the U.S. stock market in general? You mentioned something about 2015, 2016, seeing a major collapse. What about until then? Do you think we go higher from here? What are your thoughts on investing in the stock market?
I think what happened was Bernanke and Obama finally got the message, and Bernanke is now pumping more money in to keep his $600 billion quantitative. He calls it QE2, quantitative easing 2. It's actually quantitative easing 3. It's the third one he's done. And they're just doing it to prop up the stock market. So it's like, you know, giving a drunk a drink in the morning to cure the hangover. Mm-hmm. Not going to help.
Mm-hmm.
So when this market comes down, it's going to come down 10 times harder. You know, it's, like I said, it's like giving a drunken sailor a Bloody Mary in the morning. It's all we're doing right now. And the reason I say 2015 to 2016 in that era is that's when the baby boomers, when the actual people start pulling out more money that goes in. And so on top of that, what Bernanke just did was he said, okay, we're going to pump $600 billion in quantitative easing too, but all of that money goes to China. It doesn't go to us. It's just really the biggest ripoff of the American people I've ever seen. And it starts with the school system not teaching us financial education and the labor unions. Again, I'm not against them. I'm just against ignorance. You know, if people know, they can make an educated decision. But if you don't know, then you have to listen to these financial planners and these politicians and these bankers who are ripping you off. I love pension plans. That's where I get my money from. I just bought a $46 million 5 golf course and major resort in Phoenix, Arizona, and the money came from a pension plan. I love those guys. But I have a choice. I have a choice, you know what I mean?
It is shocking when you see so many Americans who know their favorite sport teams' statistics, the latest news about some Hollywood starlet, or whatever else the mindless media is pouring down their throats. But at the same time, these Americans don't understand the most basic financial ideas. They are totally clueless. There's been poll after poll after poll that have shown that Americans have no clue what a subprime mortgage is or what the economic crisis, what it's really about. What about the guy who is out there? He's working a job. He's making $50,000, $60,000 a year. His wife stays home. He's doing his best to get ahead. He hears guys like you on the radio. He reads your books, and he's going, gosh, how do I make my way to that quadrant? You mentioned the different employees, self-employed. How do these people, what do they need to do? I mean, how do they begin to get financially literate enough to begin doing the right thing?
Well, that's why I said don't go to school. I didn't say education was bad. But as an adult, if you're over 18, you should be able to choose your education. But every time I went to school, they kept saying, so you can go to, my dad would say, get a PhD and get a job with the government. I thought, you're programming me. You're brainwashing me, a Pavlov dog, to look for a job. So what I've always said, you know, 1973, when I came back from Vietnam, my rich dad said, there's two things you must do before, you know, I get any older. One was take real estate investment courses. And not because of real estate. I had to learn real estate is about how do you turn debt into money.
Okay, Mo, there you have it. Now, let's do a recap. Now, we've discussed the commerce game and how to play. We discussed trust law. We talked about setting up your will and all of these different games and giving you the basics, which is understanding the rules of the game. And regardless of what you're going to invest in, if you have in your brain, computer, the basics of the structure inside the United States, what's going on, you're able to successfully take debt and use it successfully to live, help yourself, and help other people. Now, I want to tell you a story about a man. This man, what he would do is every year, he was an older man, and I don't know where he came from or who he was. And even though they told me his name 1,000 times, I still didn't know that man. But what he would do was he would come around Christmas time to the place where they feed homeless people, and the homeless people would line up out the door. The line would be going all the way around the corner. And when he would come, he would have a bag, big brown paper bag, And everybody in that line, he'll come up and stop on the front of that line. He'd give each person a dollar. He had that dollar folded up. He'd give each one a dollar, and he'd go all the way around that line, and he'd give each one a dollar on down the line. Now, if he ran out of dollars, he'd reach in his pocket. If he ain't in the line, he'll pull out some more dollars, and he'd work on until everybody that was out there that didn't have anything had a dollar in their pocket. And I was so impressed with that, and he really, really inspired me. And the place where they was feeding me hungry people had a little window there, and it was a sign in the window of the woman who established the place where the people came to eat every morning. They got breakfast every morning, didn't cost them nothing. All they had to do was go in there and get in line. They give them a ticket. They go sit down to the table, and they go to the window, and they get the food, and they sit down, and they eat it. They had something to eat and something to drink. But on that sign, the lady said, "My duty in life is to do as much good for as many people as I possibly can until the day I die." And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I would read it, and I come back another time and go up to that window. Someday I would come up there in the evening and stuff, and I'd sit and stare at that sign, and I would read that and turn that over and over and over in my brain until it made perfect sense to me. And it ended up being one of the basic principles. In order for you to be successful, you have to help other people be successful as you go along. There are a lot of people out here in this world that are homeless and don't have anything now. And a lot of these people come from good families. They have college degrees and all kind of stuff. And they have fallen on hard times. And I think, based on what I know, I think the reason why they stay in the position that they're in so long because they have not triggered the mechanism in the brain to change their mind to get up and to move forward and to press on. Because if you're falling down and you're not able to get up and stuff, you're going to have to regain your composure until you get up. But then once you get up, you got to stand up and you got to start over and keep on going and press on through this life. So I wanted to add that particular situation because I experienced that, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if this man is still doing this, but I'm pretty sure that if he is, he's doing something that's wonderful. It's just a gesture. It's coming out of his own pocket. It's his own personal baby that he's doing to deal with his fellow man. And to look at that gentleman, he never struck me as a Christian. He never talked. He just came by and he's just giving out these dollar bills to these people that he know may not have. He didn't need to know who you were. He didn't need a background check. He never had to fill out an application and do none of that. He just came up there and just gave you something. So anyway, we're going to go into the third segment of what we're doing here before we go down to the close and get a little bit more of this information. But before we do, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904. 9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, now we're going to get into another phase here.
That's all I'm doing. I'm taking debt, and I make money off of debt. And the second thing I had to learn was learn how to sell. So that's why I recommend Donald Trump and I recommend network marketing, because, you know, entrepreneurs kind of sell. That's all I'm doing all day long is selling. So let me talk to you about debt and how I look at things. Next door to me is a property. A guy wants $10 million for it, and in half an hour he's going to probably sign the deal for it. So most guys would say, well, that's terrible. That's $10 million worth of debt. But what they don't see is the property pumps $1 million profit a year. Now, why wouldn't I get into debt at $10 million to make $1 million a year? You know, to me, that's common sense. But the average person, because they've been so brainwashed, they don't see, all they see is the debt. They don't see the opportunity. I get $1 million a year to be $10 million in debt, plus I pay no taxes on it. $1 million tax-free a year. That's not big money, you know, but $100,000 a month. But it's money. So I see debt as, well, I'm going to get rich. The average person is looking for the bigger house. Oh, I want a nice house. You know, the pro football stars, they buy a big house, they buy the mother a house, and they wonder why when they go bankrupt at the end of 5 years, because they bought houses. They didn't buy investment property. It's funny, but if you can't see the opportunity, you can't see it. I'll take $10 million of debt every day to make $1 million a year. That's net. All day long. The guy's gonna give me the property because I'm gonna give him $10 million of debt.
We're in our final moments here of the interview. I want to ask you also, just to briefly cover the cash flow quadrant. I think it's really vital that people at least hear this from you. In 2000, you wrote an excellent book called The Cash Flow Quadrant, in which you laid out four different financial paths that each individual can take.
Right.
Just briefly talk about each of those and which one that you think is obviously the best one for people to be in.
Yeah, the quadrant stands for the four people that make up the world of business. You always got to have these four people. E stands for employees. So you could be the CEO and still be an employee, like Jack Welch was an employee. The founder of the company of General Electric was Thomas Edison, but Welch is an employee. S stands for self-employed small business, especially like a doctor or a lawyer or a guy who owns one restaurant. Big business is B, 500 employees or more. That's T's Forbes definition of a business owner, 500 employees or more. And I stands for investor. Now, the difference between the I and people who invest and the investor is the investor is the one who's receiving the money. So there's people who invest, but they're not the investor. So the reason I became a B in the I was because I'm always raising capital to make me richer. So I go to these pension funds and say, I want to buy this corner property. I need $10 million. Would you give it to me? So, oh, sure, please. So I pay them the interest on $10 million, but I make the $1 million net on it. I'm an investor. I'm not investing. I use other people's money. So there are four different people, four different mindsets. And the reason I say if you want to be rich and happy, don't go to school, is because when you go to school, they teach you that the world is risky, you should play it safe, you should buy a house, invest for the long term, live below your means. I mean, who wants to live below your means and cut up your credit cards? I mean, how do you survive by cutting up your credit cards? And the reason they do that is because they're run by the NEA, National Extortion Association of America, the teachers' unions. And they're the biggest contributors to the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. I'm not against them. Like I said, that's where I get my money from. I'm just saying we should give kids a choice to train people to be capitalists also. We're already training to be communists or socialists. Train them to be capitalists also. Train them to be entrepreneurs. Teach them about taxes and debt. Teach them why the tax laws are written for the rich, not for the working class. That would be an education. Then the kids can sit there and go, I want to take a different path than following my mom and dad. And that's what happened for me. In 73, when I came back from Vietnam, And my poor dad said, go back to school, get my PhD, and get a job with the government. I said, I'm going to listen to my rich dad, become a capitalist. So that's all it is. Education gives people choices.
You mentioned in your books that the investor, that I in the quadrant, is actually the lowest tax levels as well.
Zero tax. As long as you use other people's money. If you use your money, you pay high taxes. It's really funny. These 401Ks, I mean, God bless them, because that's where I got my money from. And I pay no tax, they pay tax. There's something stupid about that.
Robert, where do you see gold and silver heading over the next 12 to 24 months?
Well, I always buy gold, and I've been buying gold and silver since 1972, so I was in Vietnam when I saw that happening. But I don't really care. I just rather have gold and silver than dollars. That's all I know. So I make so much cash that sometimes I get caught. I don't have an investment to move to. So if I get caught with excess cash, I just put it in gold and silver. The reason I don't like gold and silver is the taxes are too high on it, 28%. So I kind of stay away from it. I'm trying to move into debt all the time. But to answer your question, I think that in the next few years, you're going to see gold and silver, probably gold at $7,000 and silver maybe at $6,000.
$6,000 silver?
Yeah. Because for the first time in history, if you understand history, there's more gold and silver on planet Earth. Gold is a hoarded, is a precious metal that's hoarded, and silver is an industrial metal. So silver is being consumed every day, gold isn't. So for the first time in history, there's more gold on planet Earth than silver, and silver is being depleted. So that's why I've been saying to everybody, buy silver. You know, I've been buying silver at about $2. I also own a silver mine and a gold mine and a copper mine and an oil field. I like commodities.
You're actually in the business. You're actually a miner.
Yes, yes, yes. But so I say for the average person, you know, if you don't know how to use debt, I mean, if you're going to use debt, take a real estate course and, you know, study it, become a student of debt. But if you don't want to do that, rather than save money, I always say, you know, buy silver today. Silver is a 26, 27. You know, you should have bought it at 3, but that's hindsight. I still think it's going to keep going up. I think the dollar is toast. I'm really bidding against the dollar. If you think Mr. Obama and Mr. Bernanke can save the dollar, then save dollars. But if you don't have much faith in your government and the Federal Reserve, then save gold and silver. So I just hold my wealth in precious metals.
Final question, Robert, on real estate. We've been through a massive subprime crisis in 2007, 2008, and of course now we're still having a lot of fallout. There's a lot of uncertainty about the U.S. real estate market. What's your macro view telling you, you know, your experience in real estate? You're obviously buying and acquiring because you're finding deals, but for the average investor out there who doesn't have a whole lot of training, is this a dangerous time to be getting into real estate?
Well, is brain surgery dangerous? You know what I mean? You've got to take classes. I mean, I take classes constantly. I'm always in real estate classes. I'm always in business classes. So I took, you know, back in 1973, I took a three-day course. It cost me $385. Today, probably about $5,000. But that $385 course for 3 days has made me a multimillionaire over and over and over again. You see, the dollar is debt. It's not real estate. It's debt. You know, can you take debt and make money out of it? Most people can't. So when you don't take a real estate course, what are you doing to yourself? And you look at what's going to happen. The population right now is in the U.S. is about 330 million. It's expected to go to 400 million in a few years. They all have to have some place to live, or they'll live under the street, you know. So all of my properties, like Donald Trump is extremely high-end. I'm in workforce housing. I invest in places where Texas and Oklahoma specifically, because that's where the oil jobs are. Coincidentally, that's where my oil fields are, too. So I provide the oil rigs, and then my workers stay in my apartments. So real estate is basically debt and jobs. And as long as the populations keep increasing, I'm doing better and better and better. And people can't afford their houses because they can't get financing today. Many of them are moving into my lower rent income houses. So my vacancies are actually really low today, about 96% occupied. And then on top of that, interest rates were at 7%. Now they're down to 5%. You think I'm taking 2 points, you know, 2 percentage points on probably $100 million? How much that's worth to me? Plus, I don't pay tax on it. love capitalism. And that's all I'm saying to people is you want to be a communist, go to school. You want to be a capitalist, you got to go someplace else.
Robert, if you could leave our audience with one thought or one idea, what would you leave them with?
Well, your greatest asset is your mind. But if you don't invest in it by, you know, attending classes and have coaches, and that's what we do, is we provide people the wherewithal to expand their mind. The mind is unlimited. It's like I said, you know, I mean, this guy comes up to me and says, I want $10 million for that property. I said, how much money will I make? Is this $1 million a year? I'll take it. But the average person will say, I don't have $10 million. Well, they just lost $1 million of tax-free income. What is that worth to you? Oh, I just don't want to take the time. I said, okay, good. You made your choice. I made my choice back in 1973. I'd rather see the $10 million worth of debt and make $1 million profit tax-free. That makes sense to me. To people like my poor dad, it doesn't make sense. Does that make sense to you?
Sure does.
Whatever makes sense to you, to me, to work hard all my life and get paid $250,000 a year and pay $175,000 of that in taxes, mm-hmm. Stupid. I'd rather make $1 million a month and pay no tax. But that takes education. And I spent my life training to do that. You know, here a compounding interest, well, that's compounding education also. So the more you learn, the more you make, the less you pay in tax. But most people are not willing to invest in their education, and that's their problem. They go to school, get another job, and then become a communist and expect the government to take care of them.
Well, I really appreciate your dedication to helping people understand, opening their eyes. You've written tons of books. They have all had the same information you're talking about right now. So I would encourage people, at least if they haven't read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, to go out and get it. And if they have, I think The Conspiracy of the Rich is a book they should go pick up. If our audience would like to learn more about you and your work, Robert, how can they do so?
Well, my website is richdad.com, and they have a whole series of events. And we're an international company. We have offices all over the world. But we have programs. You know, I think the best thing I ever did was create the cash flow board game, because that's how I learned. I started playing Monopoly. And, you know, the game Monopoly, four greenhouses, one red hotel, that's all I needed to know. I said, every month I get one greenhouse, I get this, a red hotel, I get this much. He goes, yeah. So why would I go to school? So now I own red hotels.
Interesting.
That makes sense to me. And I pay no tax. That makes sense to me. I provide a lot of jobs. That makes sense to me. But to be worried about losing my job doesn't make sense to me. Be worried about my retirement doesn't make sense to me. Trying to live below my means doesn't make sense to me. Saying my house is an asset is not sensical to me. But if it makes sense to you, then that's your choice. It's a free country. And I'm saying we have the choice of who we listen to, my poor dad or my rich dad. And I made my choice.
Very interesting stuff, Robert. I really appreciate you coming on the program with us today, Follow the Money Weekly, and wish the best of luck to you. And I know you have another book coming out soon.
Yeah, I think next March is called An Unfair Advantage. Unfair Advantage. And it's about how I use debt and taxes to get rich. Again, the tax laws are written for capitalists. If you just know that, you go, oh, that's simple. Now what are you going to do about it? But if you went to school, you're being trained to be a proletariat, communist, labor unions.
So you'll be getting into the rules of the rich in that book as well, kind of delving into, because many people don't realize that tax laws not only favor the rich, they make the rich richer.
The tax laws are incentivized by the government to have capitalists do what the government cannot do, like provide housing and drill for oil. I drill for oil, I strike oil, and I get, you know, I get a 28% return. I put, let's say, $100,000 into an oil project. I get a $28,000 return on my money day one. So that's why when I look at gold and silver, I'm taxed at 28%. Why would I do that? So the moment I drill for oil, I get a 28% return. And my friends called me up, I'm going to get a 12% return. I said, well, you're short 16%.
Wow.
So that's what Unfair Advantage is about, is you understand tax law is written for capitalists. If you want to be a communist or a socialist, go to school. I don't want to be one of those. It's a choice, you know. My sister's a Buddhist. She wants to be a Buddhist. That's fine. I don't care. You know. You want to be a Catholic? Be a Catholic. But don't be a stupid one. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, my guest has been Robert Kiyosaki. The book, Rich Dad's Conspiracy of the Rich, available in all bookstores on the web at richdad.com. Robert, it's been an absolute honor. Thank you so much for your time, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Great interview.
Okay, brothers and sisters, listen up. If you got a problem with getting rid of your mortgage contract, if you're receiving anything in the mail from them, if you got a problem with student loans, banks, credit card companies, child support, the Internal Revenue Service, go to newfreehelpgroup.com. That's www.newfreehelpgroup.com. And when you get there, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we get you set up to get rid of the whole thing. www.newfreehelpgroup.com.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, what we're looking for this week is three people with the Polynomics Platinum Matrix that puts you in business for yourself, give you a full benefit package. Andrew Hawkins Archive is absolutely free. We want to put three people in business for themselves. Okay, you can have a job; it doesn't really matter. You can work for the as an air traffic controller. You can work for the fire department. You can work for the sheriff department. It doesn't really matter. My question to you is: where is your baby that you created using the brain that's sitting on top of your shoulders that the Creator has given you? What have you used it for to create something that you can create a livelihood from inside the United States that's operating under a free enterprise system? What have you done? So we need three people that would like to take advantage of their own opportunity so they can get in the position. And what we'll do is, as a result of you doing that, we're going to coach you through and help you with that and walk you through that until you get up and running so that you can exploit that thing and put it on out there, get it on out there, so you start generating enough debt notes to invest to get a hold of some real money. That's what we're doing here. We're working with the Moles. Instead of sitting back complaining about your condition and complaining about what condition your condition is in, here's an opportunity for you to actually do something with it right here. Go to www.tahaka, T-A-R-H-A-K-A, powernomics.net, www.tahakapowernomics.net, or either just go to Google and type in Tahaka Power Team. Tahaka Power Team. If you got problems with your mortgage, you got problems with student loans, you got problems with the Internal Revenue Service, credit card companies, go to Google and just type in debt elimination system. Just type in debt elimination system. Or either type in newfreehelpgroup.com, www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Okay, and then we can go to work on some things. We can go to work. I don't like complaining about a situation. I like to get to the solution of a situation. What is the solution to the problem?
It's real simple. First you get the power. Then you get the money as a result of having the power. And as a result of having the two, now you're officially ready for the girl. Most of us do not understand inside the United States the reason why we, as people of African descent, are in the condition that we are in is because we have no businesses. We have no power. We have no wealth. All the other countries that are here, if you look at the Koreans, the Japanese, the Chinese, the nail industry, the hair industry, and so on and so forth, you don't see these people filling the prisons. Why? Because these people have functioning businesses. Get your own business. Go to newfreehelpgroup.com, click on the link to Tahaka Powernomics Network, and when you do, call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We have the smokiness business going right now, which will generate the capital and set up the network for you to accumulate the wealth you need, and that way you can take back your communities, Take your neighborhoods and transform them into thriving communities. Call me, Tahaka Mount Elbay, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go to www.newfreehelpgroup.com. Examine that page. Just check out everything on the page. Check out the links. Check out the video. Call me, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, we're back. Moses, I've been talking all night. I'm going to take a quick break, and we will be right back, okay?
Life lands a crushing blow, and once again, a heart is broken. And as history repeats itself, these few words are sadly spoken.
Into the ancient African records, or what you're calling your Bible today, about the man who was blind, and Jesus, or you call him Jesus or Yahshua, whatever name you use for that. He made it what a man could see. And the man went out telling everybody about the man that made it possible for him to see. And there were people out there who were skeptical, they were negative, they had something bad to say about it, they had criticism, they had all of this stuff about something they knew absolutely nothing about. But the man made a statement. He said, all I know, I don't know nothing about what you talking about, or what you talking about, what didn't happen, or what didn't happen, who he was, and how bad it was, and all this. I ain't trying to hear none of that garbage. All I know is, whereas I was blind, now I see. So, during your journey, you're going to run into people who are pessimistic. They have a pessimistic outlook on life. You see, a battery inside a car, that battery's job is to supply current to the vehicle so your lights will work, your horn will blow, and all these things will be operational in that vehicle. And it's the same way that you're going to have to be. You're going to have to be a great energizer that is full of energizing effort and thought so that you can be an aid and a support and a help to somebody else. You cannot go out with a pessimistic outlook on life and hope to help anybody because your attitude will rub off on other people. Attitudes infringe on other people. That is another very, very important aspect of what we're talking about here this evening. Attitude. What is your attitude about yourself? How do you see yourself? Because, see, you're going to be the one that's the great energizer because you have already taken responsibility for yourself and you have taken the reins of that bull and you are moving and proving to yourself beyond any shadow of a doubt that whatever it is that you're about to expose to somebody else, that you are doing it, you have done it, and you are successful with it, so now you are officially qualified to use it to help somebody else. If anybody got any questions about your credentials, or you got to do a limb on the table, this is what I do. This is how I benefit. This is what I'm trying to use to benefit you. This is my outlook on life. This is how I see life. I'm not steady burdened down with a brain full of negativism and spewing out negativity. I'm not involved in that. I'm looking forward to a peaceful and enjoyable day. I'm happy to be alive. I love my life. And if I love my life, I can afford to love you. You can't, see, if you don't love you, you got a problem with you. And you feel negative about your own self, how in the world is it possible for you to have a positive impact on somebody else? You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. The first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to start with you. And keep in mind, we ain't talking about something different. We're still talking about that same brain that sits right there on top of your shoulders. You can have a rich man standing in front of you. You're a poor man. You're both breathing the same air. You're both drinking water. You're both going to the toilet. Both of y'all put on your pants one leg at a time. The only difference is his thinking is different than yours. So you have to make a choice. You can say, I don't want nothing to do with becoming successful. I don't want nothing to do with making no money. I don't want nothing to do with accumulating no debt notes. I don't want nothing to do with it. I'm going to prove to the world beyond any shadow of a doubt that it's much, much easier to fail and be successful than it is to use what the Creator has given me and my mother and father have birthed me into the world with. It's much, much easier to use what I was given, the talents that I was given, to be a blessing to myself and to be a blessing to somebody else in this life. To me, that's exciting. That's fantastic for you to be happy about yourself. Because if you are unhappy with your own self, then you got a serious problem. and somewhere deep down inside that you tell me, you say, well, I don't like so-and-so, and I can't stand him, and I hate her, and all this. Well, me, personally, I feel deep down inside, somewhere in your consciousness, there's somewhere in there about you, somewhere, that you don't like yourself. Something's going on. I mean, we have counted all of our assets. We have sunshine, we have rain, we have houses, we have apartments, we have jobs, we have air, we have convenience stores, we have, instead of constantly complaining and looking at the problems, why don't we stop and say, I'm finna start looking at the good in my own personal situation and use my brain that's sitting right there on top of my shoulders to change my circumstances in life and be a contributor to the uplifting of society instead of a complainer and a destroyer of society. I'm going to look for a way to lift my people up instead of looking for any and every way to drag somebody down that's trying to stand up. I'm going to control my thinking, control my environment. I'm going to use, it may be for the very first time in your life, I'm actually going to sit down and think, cut off the idiot box. I'm going to cut off football. I'm going to get off of being stuck on stupid. I'm going to start doing something with the life that I was given. I'm going to do something with it. And if I do nothing with it, I'm going to die trying to do something with it. Okay? So it doesn't matter whether you are Baptist, Presbyterian, Catholic, Holiness, Jehovah's Witness, Nation of Islam, Moorish, what's the other one? Hebrew Israelite, you all still have a head on your shoulders with a brain encased in it. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to contribute to the uplifting of yourself and contribute to the uplifting of your people? What are you going to do with the talents in which you've been born with? There are a lot of people who wasn't quite as fortunate as you. A lot of children were aborted. They didn't come into this life. A lot of people died in an electric chair. A lot of people died in gas chambers. A lot of people were shot down in the streets. They're gone. They don't have no more chances. But you're still alive today. So you are faced with tomorrow. It's exactly 9:52 p.m. Eastern Standard Time where I am right now. I look forward to tomorrow so that I can start over doing more good for myself, which will put me in a position to do more good for other people, because I cannot become successful unless I make other people successful as I go along. So I look forward to tomorrow. I'm excited about it. Now, after this broadcast is over, I'll do a little bit more work, but sooner or later I'll go to bed, and I'll get up. And I'll do what I have to do in the morning to start over, continually doing what I do on a regular basis to contribute to the uplifting of my people, because this is my passion. Now, you might have something else that you're doing. You might be an Avon salesman, or you might be an Amway salesman, or you may be a Miller Lucas salesman. Whatever it is, if that's your baby, make the best out of it. But if you run into somebody that got a brain full of negativism, drop that zero. Get away from that. And going on to somebody that's a little bit more positive, just go into an environment where you can shake off the negativism and go ahead and start on something else. But nevertheless, you must drop that zero. Get rid of anything that's taken away from your ability to live. You see, because working on a job ain't living. What you're doing is making a living. But what you want to do is get in a position where you can get on with the business of living. And you'll be much more happy and much more successful if you're working on something that you created, and what you created is making a profit for you. You're benefiting from it, and other people that you know or not know around the country are benefit as a result of what you're exposing them to. That is a joyous feeling, to be able to help somebody based on something that you have created. That nobody dictates anything to you. This is your baby, and you're using it to help other people. And so I just wanted to add that. We're going down to the last few minutes of the broadcast, and I hope tonight that you have gotten something out of this. Keep in mind that on Wednesday night we will be back, and we will be dealing with our class, our wealth-building class on Wednesday night. And you all can dial into the broadcast at 712-432-3100. The access code is 865-074. That's Wednesday night at 7:45 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so I would encourage you, when you come, bring all of the people that you've been trying to expose your business to so that they can hear some things that they can use to be successful. This is a wonderful project that we have embarked on, and there are a lot of people who are getting a lot out of it and becoming successful, okay? I've been your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bailey. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, y'all take it easy.